The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
By tomorrow, I will rule the world!
You think he's gone? He's not gone! That's the whole point! He's never gone!
Is this some radical new therapy?
You see?
New start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Welcome, you've got mail.
Hey,
well, I must have not been paying attention. Just talking to me. Do you think that you could repeat the question? And I listen more attentively. There must have been something in all of that nothing that wasn't quite so easy to see. And I must have missed something when you were just talking to me.
Gretchen Putnam, managing editor of Eagle Tribune, and you shouldn't be listening to Paying Attention.
I don't mind just a little. It's driving me out of my mind.
Prestando atención. Cuanto más duggan. On Paying Attention. Radios. Show.
I hate you so much. Normally, I'm already ready to go home. Today I'm hoping for an 8-hour show. we gotta wait to that little end finale thing. I know there's a word for that music. I just have no idea what it is. Mike Flynn.
It's not a prelude.
It's a postlude.
A postlude. There he is. Alrighty. Should we start the show? Should we at least pretend we're here?
I don't know. Are you guys done arguing over there?
Yeah, totally.
What was that about?
I said to Paul, I said to everybody, okay, we're up. I pushed the on-air button, and then Paul started chatting. I was like, ugh.
Let me interpret that for you, Timmy. He got jealous that I was talking to his new intern because his new intern is attractive.
Attractive?
And I was talking to her.
Are you kidding me? Attractive?
And so he yelled at me because he was a little jealous at the time.
Yes. Yeah, because I'm all about jealousy, right? Yeah, okay.
I got a feeling today's going to be a whole different kind of show.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, Timmy's got it right. All right, let's see. What should we do? Should we tell people who we are, why we're here, or should we just go right into stuff?
The who, the why, the what.
All right, Tom Duggan on the Paying Attention radio program here on WCAP every Saturday afternoon from 10 to 1. And the Valley Patriot is out on the streets. I've been driving around for the last, I don't know, it feels like forever, but probably the last 48 hours, delivering this bad boy all over the Merrimack Valley. 26 communities that we are in. Starting next month, we're going to be in 29 communities because we're going to be hitting the beach again, which is great. Salisbury, Seabrook, Hampton, all over the place. We're in Newburyport year-round. We're in Amesbury year-round, and we're going to be hitting the beaches starting next month. Don't forget that starting this month, Markey's is already open during the week. So during the wintertime, Markey's, if you want to go get great scallops, clams, stuff like that, they're only open like on Sundays. But starting this month, they're back open during the week. So even though summer's not officially here and it's cold outside, you might want to go get some lobster or some fried clams during the week. Now you can do that over at Markey's, which is
but
great.
Not Browns.
So you should perhaps.
No. We don't like Browns.
So because growing up, you're either a Browns guy or a Markey's guy.
When Browns decides to spend money with me, then we'll like Browns. Right now, we love Markey's.
So Markey's your calendar for Sunday.
Markey, oh, that's good. All right, see? Yeah. I thought that was going to be a bad pun, but it actually worked for
you. It's an average pun.
Can Palmer I say, Paul, I really like your shirt.
Oh, thank you.
That's snazzy. I
told
like
them
it.
That the 70s called. They want their shirt back. And then Michelle went, I really like that. And I went, Paul, I love that shirt. That's the greatest shirt I've ever seen in my life.
Hey, you might have to.
It's good. I think it's a little too good for a Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah, because we got two Pauls in the studio, so we're going to have to try and push this out. Oh, by the way, hi, everybody. I'm Tom Duggan, paying attention, all that stuff. By now, if you don't know who we are, then, well, and just shame on you. And if this is the first time you've ever listened to the program, boy, do we got a treat for you today. All kinds of stuff going on. We've got my co-host, Paul, who's soon to not be my co-host anymore, soon to be Michelle, will be my co-host very shortly. And also in the studio is Paul Adams, who is running for state representative. We're not going to let you talk for a few minutes. You got to just kind of sit back there and just kind of watch how things work a little bit.
Can I ask a question? Is this the Paul Adams that called in last week?
Yes, he called in last week when we had Sal to beat because he's running against
Sal
to beat.
That's right, the person behind the voice.
Yes, so he's running for state rep against Sal to beat for the Republican nomination to fill Barry Feingold's state representative seat. So he's going to just kind of stay with us, chat.
Paul, it's going to be tough to beat.
It's going to be, oh, God.
Oh, boy.
I'm not going to miss that when you're gone. When Michelle is sitting there doing your job.
You're not
going to
miss my puns?
I'm not going to miss that at all.
It's getting a little old.
All right, very good. So,
and my question is to Paul: is can he define himself against his opponent, as his opponent could not do last week?
We'll get
I don't know if you recall.
We want to ramp up to some things because he's going to be here for 3 hours. And so, what we're going to do with you is what we do with Sal to beat, which is what we do with any new candidates. Let them come in and just kind of hang with us. And he can talk a little politics about his campaign, but we want to pick his brain about other stuff that's not campaign-related just to see what kind of guy he is. Because if he wins, we're going to be stuck with this guy for at least another 30 years once somebody gets elected in Massachusetts. Incumbents never get out.
So, Paul, what kind of guy are you?
I'm a nice guy.
There you go. There's the answer.
I'm a friendly guy.
I guess I'm supporting Sal to beat 978-455. I do not support
nice
guys.
No, you're against nice guys.
In fact, one of the reasons why I'm really thinking about not supporting Charlie Baker at this point
is he's nice.
Is because he's too nice.
Yeah. Well, let me clarify.
I'm just had a
nice guy being a little bit different from very personable, amicable, and someone who works
it's
hard.
It's too late to
aggressive.
Save it now, Paul. You're all done.
Oh, come on.
All right, we'll see throughout the show. You get three hours to redeem yourself. 978-454-4980. Here's what we've got on tap for you today. Michelle is in the studio. That's really the most important thing.
Okay. Everything else is
and if you want to talk on,
garbage.
Do you want to talk? Do you want to chat with us? Maybe after the next break you can sit down and we'll chat a little bit? All right, okay. She wants to just kind of soak in the ambiance, see how things work a little bit, take a deep breath, something I haven't been able to do in about 6 days, but hopefully today I'm going to be able to start relaxing a little bit because the Valley Patriot is done. It's on the streets, and we're going to talk a little bit about that after. Also, on Thursday night, was the firing of Lawrence School Superintendent Wilfredo LeBoy. We're going to talk a lot about that. And a lot about the really, it was just an awful, awful prosecution of any public official. It's the worst prosecution of a public official that I've ever seen in the history of prosecutions of public officials. I sat there at this meeting waiting for the allegation that Wilfredo LeBoy knew about politicians using the school department printing press to print campaign material. I kept waiting for that. Crickets. I kept waiting for them to say, well, you allowed Mark Rivera to use this LexisNexis software to illegally do background searches on politicians. We didn't hear any of that. I was waiting for them to say, you took $10,000 of travel expenses and you transferred it into your own personal account.
Never.
Didn't hear any of that. You know what we heard? We heard you had alcohol in your office. Isn't that awful? You had alcohol in your office. That's a violation of school department policy.
Opened alcohol, by the way? Or was
I think there were at least one or two bottles.
There are 16 bottles.
That happened, but there were 16 bottles
but
total.
But only one charge.
In this little Anwa, which I think.
16 bottles?
16, yeah.
I was thinking like a bottle of whiskey in the bottom drawer.
No. It was like an Anwa. It was like a liquor cabinet that he had
like
in his
a
office.
Wet bar?
Parties in his office.
Yeah, so we've got some clips. Actually, I've got a disc for you when you get a chance and a list and all that stuff. But I was too busy with Michelle at the beginning of the show to even do our pre-show warm-up stuff. So, and I think that's actually going to be a pattern if she keeps coming into the program. She's going to be, she's it. So here's why I brought in Michelle. All right.
All right.
So Michelle calls me. Actually, Dr. Chuck, one of my business partners at the Valley Patriot, called and said, "You've been bugging me for 6 years to get you an intern, to get you somebody to get help for the Valley Patriot, because I do almost everything myself."
That's right.
I mean, Paula does a lot, and Chuck does really not a whole lot, but but I have we have some volunteers and some people help, but I do most of the main stuff. And I'm swamped. I'm swamped all the time. I mean, I get 2 hours sleep a night for the 3 days before the paper comes out, and then I'm driving on delivering the stupid thing. So, make a long story short, Chuck calls me and says, "You've been bugging me for 6 years to get you some help. I think I've got you some help. I've got this girl," because Chuck is a professor at UMass Lowell.
So after those four words, you're relatively happy after "I got this girl." I got this boy, I got this guy.
If he had said "I got this guy," it would have been, "I'm sorry, we're busy.
I got to go back to sleep."
But now it's like, "I got this girl right now."
All right, go ahead.
So he said, "I've got this girl. She's interested in interning." I said, "Well, what is she majoring in?" Normally I ask, "Is she cute?" That's usually my first question, but I really need the help, so now I'm actually thinking functional. I'm like, "Well, what is she majoring in?" He said, "I think she's majoring in communications." I said, "Is she cute?" Which is usually my first question. Is she cute? He said, "Well, you know, I guess she's cute. I don't really look at her that way because she's like a student and I'm a professor," and you know, he was lying through his teeth, but he said, "Well, I don't know." He says, "But I think you'd think she was really cute." So I was like, "All right, is she cuter than Paula?" He said, "Absolutely not." I said, "All right, so that I know I'm safe. So let's get this girl in and let's see if we can't get her to do some intern stuff for the Valley Patriot." But I was so swamped. I said, "I don't know like where I can plug her in right now because we're in the process of putting a paper together."
But depending on how cute she was, you could certainly
the
plug level her
really
in anywhere.
Determines whether or not I could find a way to squeeze
That's
her
right.
in. Right.
Hence, she's here.
So then we had it. We did meet. We did. What was the name of that place that we met? Brood Awakenings. Okay, because I think there's an event going on there today. But we met at Brood Awakenings. We had a coffee. We kind of chatted about the paper a little bit. And then I was driving home afterwards, and I'm still trying to figure out how we can plug her in. And it occurred to me somewhere like that day or the day after, because I gave a lot of thought to, you know, how we can utilize a college person who needs the help, who needs the work, and, you know, plug her into like stuff that I need done, but we'll be able to do it without oversight. I don't want to bring someone in and then have to spend all my time watching them or training them. So I said, well,
the first thing you thought of was my seat here at WCAC.
I said, I really need Paul Morano as my co-host on the radio show.
So that was thought number
what
one.
What I need to do is I need to transition her into the studio, let her get comfortable with what she's doing, and then just kick Paul to the curb when she's ready to take over.
That's right. But after that, you thought what?
No, so after that, I said, look, one of the biggest problems that I'm having right now, as far as things that need to get done that aren't getting done, is that we break a lot of news on this program. Last week, Sammy Reyes called in and talked about how he drove by Bally's after the budget hearing, and the mayor missed his budget hearing, and he heard that the mayor was at Bally's, which is the nightclub in Lawrence. So he drove to Bally's and went into the nightclub and found the mayor at the nightclub, nightclubbing instead of chairing the budget hearing. That's breaking news. That should have been on the Valley Patriot website an hour after we got off the air.
A picture of that. Yeah,
it should have been news, but when I leave the studio, I've got all kinds of things to do. We had to go to Tep Theta, which we'll talk about, great Cambodian food. Then I had to go work on the paper. So I'm thinking about, after I met with Michelle, I'm thinking about like all these things that happened during the show that we can't get up online as news stories because I'm still just one guy and really too busy
to
do
it. All the bad things in Lawrence, by the way, they happen during your show on
purpose. Yeah, they do, exactly.
Because nobody can cover it would cover it.
So what I've decided to do is I'm going to have her have a dual function. She's going to help me with the Valley Patriot, but she's going to do it here. She's going to come into the studio, and when we break news, now if Paul Adams says something tremendously newsworthy today, after the show, Michelle's going to write up the story. We're going to upload it online, and then when the next Valley Patriot comes out, we'll go through the online material, find the best stories that Michelle has written, and we're going to publish them.
And I'll put it on my website in 5 minutes.
Yeah, Paul will have it up on his website.
If it's positive.
Right? So that's going to be Michelle's function now here on the Paying Attention Radio program for as long as she will have us. I got a feeling this might be her only show. She might not want to be with us after this because this is kind of a really bizarre show. So
hosted by a really bizarre person, Michelle.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I'm good? All right, excellent. Okay, so now we can start the show. 978-454-4980. Let's take a quick break. Right? No? We can?
No.
We can't.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Wilfredo LaBoy. We'll introduce Paul Adams. If she gets brave, we'll introduce Michelle.
Paul's just laughing and laughing. He's just laughing and laughing. Because if you guys at home could see Michelle, you'd be like,
yeah, she's just clapping for herself.
She's happy.
Yeah.
She is like, exactly. she's my cheerleader. Like she's exactly line. What I needed. It's like it dropped out of the sky out of nowhere. God was just, he said, you know what Tom needs? Tom needs help on the radio show and on the Valley Patriot. Here she is. Someone willing to put the time in, someone who's majoring in communication, somebody who's smart.
As if any of those things matter to you, Tom.
And someone not a threat to Paul. So it all works out. 978-454. Can we start the show? Is that what we're going to do now?
Right after this break.
Clips of the Wilfredo LaBoy firing. Paul Adams is in the studio. We'll take your phone calls. All kinds of stuff going on. Bullying, tea party stuff. Back after this one. I'm paying attention where everybody gets it. Even my intern, Michelle.
This is Steve Paliuka, and you're listening to Paying Attention on WCAP, where everybody gets it.
And how shameful was it when we learned that there were other people getting pay raises? How do you feel about knowing that somebody, just because they're in the payroll for 3 or 4 days in 2010, they're walking away with $15,000? Is that fair? Is that okay? Is it fair that soon we're going to be laying off people? People that made 15, not 15, but on late 20s, late 30s, family people. Well, we are suggested to maintain on the payroll people that collect 3 paychecks, people that automatically get pay raises without concern for the citizens that are at the lowest scale. Is that how you want me to be your mayor?
This is Wilfredo LaBoy, and I'm a listener to the Paying Attention program with Tommy Duggan.
Talk to Michelle off the air for the rest of the program. Just learn about all the things that are going on at UMass Lowell. It's all very, very interesting stuff. 978-454-4980. I'm Tom Duggan of the Paying Attention Radio program. Paul Morano, my host, and Tim Bowmill, the fine, fine producer, is over there doing production stuff. Paul Adams is in the studio with us. He's going to talk about his campaign for state representative, and we're also going to spend some time talking about the Tea Party movement, bullying, and, of course, Thursday's firing of Lawrence School Superintendent Wilfredo LaBoy. We'll talk about the criminal charges that the criminal trial that's coming up, and we're also going to talk about things that Paul thinks is important. So for a year I've been saying to Paul, I want you to bring in one topic that you want to talk about, and then every single week since then I say, okay, Paul, what topic do you have? And he goes, I got nothing. So we're going to do that again today, just because that's been the policy.
Okay.
If you want to get in on any of this, by the way. 978-454-4980 is the phone number. We're actually just going to hang around and wait for 12 o'clock to come when the Tito Descontrol comes on Univision. And I don't know if you've ever seen Descontrol on Univision there, Paul Adams?
No, but I wouldn't be opposed to watching it.
All right, well, at 12 o'clock, you're never going to want to leave the studio. You're going to be here at 12 o'clock every single week just to watch that.
Awesome.
978-454-4980 is the phone number. Before we get to the Wilfredo LaBoy stuff, let's say hi to Paul Adams. You're a candidate for state representative. You live in Andover.
Yes, I am. I live in West Andover, and I'm running for the 17th Essex State Representative District.
All right. I was still talking, but that's okay. No, I'm just kidding.
You're enjoying your coffee.
I'm enjoying my coffee. So now, Paul, we had Sal Tabeed in here last week. He is also a Republican running and for this seat. It's the seat that is currently held by Barry Feingold. He's a fine, fine state representative representing parts of Lawrence. Most of Andover, I think you've got 2 precincts that go to Barbara Italian, and then maybe 3 or 4 precincts in Tewksbury, correct?
Well, there's 2 precincts in Tewksbury.
Okay.
It's 3 and 3A. It's Andover precincts 2 through 6 and 9, and then in Lawrence, it's D1, D2, and E1 and E4.
Okay,
so South Lawrence West and Tower Hill.
Okay, great. So you get 4 precincts in Lawrence,
and you've got most of Andover and two precincts in Tewksbury.
When my wife Joanne was...
Do you have a wife named Joanne?
I don't.
Okay, all right, just checking.
Not yet.
But somebody's right. Wife Joanne, though.
So now we had Sal Tabeed in here last week, and I actually think he did a pretty good job. He talked a lot about his experience. He talked about how he had run against Barry Pryor. And I asked you two guys, when you called in, if you could give me something that distinguishes you from Sal Tabeed, because you're both conservative, you're both Republicans, you're both from Andover, you're both young guys. I don't really see much difference. I think what you said at the time is that you are somebody that has always supported Republicans as a Republican.
Right.
And I think Sal thinks that the difference is that he's a little bit more established. He's got a wife. He pays a mortgage, that kind of stuff. But
he also said that under the assumption that I don't pay property taxes, which is true. But that means that I also don't pay a number of other taxes, right, which is totally untrue.
All right.
I mean, I pay federal taxes. I pay sales taxes. I pay just everything that he does. So to say that I'm not established, I think is untrue.
All right, so why don't you give us, now that you've had a week to think about the question, because I asked you the question last week, you didn't really answer it. So now you've had a week to think about this question. And most people don't get a week on this program. It's like, answer the question and you're out. But we like Paul Adams, so we're going to give him a chance. What's the difference between you and Sal Tabeed? I'm a Republican, okay? I'm not in your district, but if I was, why should I vote for you over Sal Tabeed? Sal Tabeed, he seems like he's got a pretty good story to tell.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll be most responsive constituent to constituents because I'll be a full-time legislator. I mean, we're in a situation where we need an extraordinary commitment right now from our legislators. I mean, we've had part-time legislators who are also attorneys. We've had a number of different people who are driving business to their practices. And, you know, I think this is part of what's wrong with the State House with our representatives. You know, we need someone who can give us a full-time effort. I will address all of our serious issues from day one full-time. And, you know, another thing is that, you know, I also serve as the secretary for the Republican Town Committee in Andover. I'm also the Republican State Committee man for our state senatorial district. And, you know, I got to say, I've never even met Sal Tabeed. I mean, I've been on the committee for 3 years, 3.5 years, and he's never shown face. So I think we're walking in different circles here. You know, he's said in the Eagle Tribune that his close friends are Democratic state representatives and some of his close associates. Were some of those individuals who were indicted in this whole Lawrence printing press scandal. So, you know, for him to say that that I'm not established is one thing, but for him to also, you know, claim these associations in the midst of one of the largest frauds in Lawrence history, I think you know, shows what kind of circles we walk in.
Wow. So the gloves come off right away. It wasn't even
guy. I'm just clarifying the differences here.
Well, I love that.
I'm just telling the truth.
Let me summarize
what
you said.
This is what he's already said in the press.
We need Paul to summarize what you said.
So, Paul Adams, you're saying that basically Sal will be a part-time legislator.
Yeah.
And he hangs around in not Republican enough circles.
No,
do I have those two points correct?
Well, I'm not saying he's not Republican enough. I'm sure he's a Republican.
Was your point about he hangs around with people that are Democrats?
Well, my point is that I don't know what kind of a Republican he is.
You don't know what kind he is. Okay.
I mean, I don't think anyone knows what kind of a Republican he is either. I mean, I've never met him in 3.5 years. I've made many attempts to reach out to him, to get him involved in the committees. I mean, he's a registered member of my committee.
So
why not be involved?
In one or two sentences, then, maybe you could tell us what kind of Republican you are.
Well, I'm a principled Republican. I'm a Republican who has certain specific values and beliefs and that guide my philosophy. I believe in lower taxes. I believe in less government regulation and hand of government in citizens' lives. I believe in less honest regulation for industry. You know, these are the things that that make a critical difference, I think. And Republicans that running out there in maybe different parties or.
You're an economic conservative.
Principled conservative.
An economic conservative. That's one of the three prongs when it comes to politics.
I think one of the major things that he did point out last week that maybe kind of got past me a little bit, and I realized this when I was listening to the tape afterwards, is I think what he was saying, and Sal Tabeed actually surprisingly admitted this last week, Paul said that I will be a full-time legislator.
Yeah.
I will not have another job while I'm being a legislator.
Hold on.
And Sal Tabeed, after you hung up, Paul questioned him, and he admitted, he said, you know, yes, I am going to continue being an attorney. I am going to continue doing what I'm doing as an attorney and run my law office.
But he saw that as positive, Sal, I think.
Yeah, because he doesn't think that you need to be a state rep full time. And actually, to be honest with you, I really don't think state reps do a whole lot full time. But it would be nice if we had a full time guy there that was doing stuff all the time, though, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And again, you know, we need a full-time representative to address the huge issues before us. I mean, we're facing a $3 billion deficit next year. I mean, this is a full-time commitment. This isn't a hobby. It's not a part-time job. It's not something that you just do when you feel like kicking back. I mean, this is something that we're in a dire economic situation right now. It's got to be confronted. And, you know, I'm the person to do that. I'm your guy.
All right, 978-454-4980. Now, you're going to hang with us? You're going to talk about, like, bullying and Tea Party stuff and Wilfredo LaBoy? We're going to get into all that kind of stuff. If you win the primary against Sal Tabeet, you're going to have to face either Frank Bonet, who is Willie Lantigua's clone on the school committee and does Willie Lantigua's bidding. He's Willie Lantigua's personnel director. He's also on the school committee, and he is also a campaign guy for Willie, versus Sammy Reyes. One of those two guys is going to win. Sammy Reyes is the opposite. He's the anti-Willie. He goes against Willie when he thinks Willie's wrong. He certainly sides with Willie when he thinks that he's right. He's also the whistleblower who blew the whistle on all this Wilfredo LaBoy stuff. How are you going to manage running against one of these two guys? If you run against Frank, you're running against Willie Lantigua. If you're running against Sammy, you're running against a whistleblower guy. How do you ramp up against either of these two guys?
Again, if I win the primary, I mean, that's wonderful. You know, I will run an extraordinarily aggressive campaign to make sure that I win. But at the same time, you know, I'm running on a platform of issues. I'm not necessarily running against the Democrats. I mean, certainly we're all opposed to a lot of the ideas that Democrats have rammed through the legislature in the last couple of decades. But, you know, I've been involved at a state level with many different issues, with economic, fiscal, and social issues. And you know, I'm proud of my work. I have a strong record of principled bipartisan collaboration. I've worked with dozens of members of the legislature on a number of different issues. I've sat on ballot question committees. So, you know, I'm running on my track record, not necessarily against the Democrats.
That's unfortunate. 978-454-4980. And I say that's unfortunate because, honestly, the Democrats, I think, have done such an abysmal job. If I was the candidate, I would be running. I wouldn't care who the person was in the silhouette of who was running against me. I would be running against the Democrat Party. I would be pointing to everything that was going on in Lawrence for the last 20 years and say, you got a Democrat legislature, Democrat Senate, Democrat governor, Democrat Congress, Democrat Senate, Democrat President.
And look where we are.
Look at Lawrence. I mean, forget the corruption. Forget Wilfredo LaBoy. Forget Willie Lantigua for a minute. Just look at why Lawrence is what it is today and why it is the failure that it is today for the most part. And most of the reason for that is because of failed liberal programs of pouring more and more social programs into the city of Lawrence, more low-income housing into the city of Lawrence, that makes Lawrence impossible to be self-sustaining.
But Tom and Paul,
yes.
How do you convince the Latino population that Paul is going to represent that what you're saying, Tom, is actually good, true, and right for them?
You don't. You convince everybody else.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Was that? Paul, I'll let you answer
Paul,
that.
Paul, would you answer the same way Tom did?
Well, look, I mean, part of my whole platform is that I'm going to speak with individual voters.
You're going to have to learn how to speak into a microphone if you're going to do this gig for more than a week.
This thing's all over the place. No, look, I will speak with voters at an individual level. I'll speak with them at their doorsteps and see what issues are important to them. And, no, absolutely, I oppose many of these catastrophic liberal policies that have, you know, just devastated our economy for the last couple of years. But, you know, again, I'm running on my platform, on my record, which doesn't consist. If you look at my website, votepauladams.com, it doesn't consist of anything whatsoever that, you know, that Tommy has made reference to. There's liberal democratic policies. I mean, I believe in what's totally polar opposite to what the Democrats have done. And I encourage you to check out my website.
Which is, give it again?
VotePaulAdams.com. It's a pretty good website.
All right, Paul's
get to read a bunch
right
of my
now.
Issues.
All right, so before we get into all this Wilfredo LaBoy stuff, I just want to make sure there's no sexual harassment lawsuits filed against me later. Before we get into all this Wilfredo LaBoy stuff, can you just talk a little bit about Lawrence as a city, what you think is right, what you think is wrong about Lawrence, and how you will represent Lawrence differently than the current state representative, Barry Feingold?
Well, first of all, I think we need a Republican representative. And I say that for a couple of reasons. First of all, we need to bring accountability back to Lawrence and back to state economic policy. And, you know, we're giving away hundreds of millions. We've given away more than $1 billion to Lawrence over the last decade with almost zero accountability. I mean, anyone who in my opinion, Barry Feingold, who voted more against the city of Lawrence, would be out of a job. You know, and anyone who's working for a private corporation wouldn't have their job for very long. But, you know, I think we need to bring accountability back. You know, that means establishing, for example, a finance control board for Lawrence. And, you know, I also believe that we need to help Lawrence get back on its own feet. And there's a couple things we can do. You know, we can establish a moratorium on new business regulation. And that would fall down to Lawrence because, you know, you have employers who are fleeing the city, who are fleeing the state because of all the problems in terms of tax policy and everything that we've run into in the last few years. So, I think we need structural change in the budget. We need structural change in how we address Lawrence specifically. You know, we've got to renegotiate union contracts. We've got to get in there and do things totally differently.
Paul, are you for or against the $35 million coming
to Lawrence? I'm against it.
Can you hear the coal mine question?
No, look, I'm opposed to it because there's really no accountability. I mean, we established a finance overseer, okay, yeah, in Springfield in the 90s that had more power than the overseer does for Lawrence today. And the situation in Springfield is a little bit different from what's happening in Lawrence. I mean, we have a couple. We're $10 million as opposed to a $41 million budget in the whole. You know, starting to sound like the U.S. government. You know, $25 million. We're spending 25% in the deficit. So, I just think that we need to find a good, strong finance control board in Lawrence because it's what people are calling for, and it's accountability, and it's what taxpayers need.
978-454-4980. Are we good on breaks? All right, let's start off on some of this Wilfredo LaBoy stuff, and then we'll allow Paul Adams and anybody else that wants to chime in. And anytime you want to just jump in with us, there's an empty microphone right there. You sit down and you...
I don't know
if you want to sit next to Paul, though.
Of course she does.
Maybe we should put Paul Adams in the middle and put her on the end.
I was going to say, there's no way she can really not sit next to a Paul.
Say that again?
What was that, Tim?
Hey, you said you might not want to sit next to Paul. There's no way to avoid that now.
Yeah, two Pauls. I meant Paul Morano, though. Because
she is sandwiched now, right now. I'm going to give the audience a mental picture. She's sandwiched between me and Paul Adams. There's very little room between us.
Yeah, so I think I would feel much more comfortable if Paul Adams was in the middle and she was as far away from you as humanly possible.
All right, let's get the microphone here. Michelle, say hello.
I moved aside so she's not sandwiched anymore.
All right, very
There's
good.
Michelle. Say
wait,
it again.
Wait, I got to turn my mic on. Go ahead.
Are we ready?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello, everyone.
So that was great. That was awesome, yeah, wasn't it, guys? She's the best.
Hey.
All right. Nice.
So nervous.
Yeah. Nice. Well, you did great. That hello, everyone, was really professional.
That was
wasn't
the
it,
best
Tom?
Hello we've ever had on this show ever.
I think so.
Well, I don't know. Puppy Girl was pretty good.
Her hello was good, too. It was about tied.
Yes. All right. We have a call. All right. Let's get to a phone call. We'll do the Wilfredo LaBoy stuff after the news. We have a phone call from one of my favorite people in the world, former state representative candidate, former Georgetown selectman, a writer, a continuous writer for the Valley Patriot. He writes for us every month. He does our Georgetown Today column. Lonnie Brennan from Georgetown. Now, you wouldn't think that there'd be people from Georgetown listening to this program, right? There's tons of people from Georgetown who listen to this show, right, Lonnie?
You can better believe it. You're a popular guy, Tom, and Paul.
Hey, Lonnie.
And Michelle.
And Michelle now, yes.
Absolutely. All right. Yes, Lonnie, what's going on?
Last week when I listened to the show, I was screaming at the radio because Sammy was giving the kind of answer that Obama gives, walking all over the place. So I'd like the opportunity to ask Paul a direct question. Hopefully you get a direct answer. Taxes is the question. Paul, on taxes, will you or have you taken the Citizens for Limited Taxation's pledge not to raise our taxes?
Absolutely. That's the first questionnaire that I filled out, and I support rolling the sales and income taxes back to 5%, as was mandated by voters in 2000. And furthermore, I would support rolling it back even further, but I think the most responsible thing to do right now would be to roll it back to 5%. And we can pay for that through immediate reforms and in state government. I mean, we have huge government reforms that we've been sitting on for years that the Republican caucus proposed 2-3 years ago, and we've seen all of these fiscal problems coming, but we haven't addressed them, and that's just unconscionable to me. And so we need to do better. And from day one, the first piece of legislation I'll file is to roll back the sales and income taxes to 5%. We'll start there.
thank you for a direct answer. I can't tell you how many of these politicians are walking all over the place, and that's going to be my one thing. I'm only going to support politicians who will straight out and say they're going to roll it back to the 5%. You know, anybody who wants to increase or talk about increases is nuts. If I hope you don't mind, Tommy, could I ask a social issue question?
You know what? You've got, like, I have 10 minutes left for news, Lonnie. You can have as much of it as you want, given how hard you work on the Valley Patriot.
Wow, God, I feel honored. I'll do 2.5 seconds. I just wanted to know, Paul, just clarify for the audience, you're not a supporter of death. You're a supporter of life. Am I correct in terms of in all ages and stages of life?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm pro-life. But with that said, I don't think I'll be voting on Roe v. Wade. I mean,
right. I just wanted to make sure that tends to be one of the real touchstone things about, you know, euthanasia and the elderly and concern and care for the elderly and also for the unborn. I just wanted to know.
Right. I respect
total
life.
Clarity,
I think life is.
Was.
I think life is sacred. I absolutely am pro-life, and I'm not ashamed of that.
You shouldn't be. You know, heck, even Finneran was pro-life. You know. Thank you very much for your time, Tommy.
Lonnie, great column. Before you go, can you just give people a preview of what your Georgetown Today column is about in this edition of the Valley Patriot that is on fine newsstands everywhere?
Time to raise the taxes is the title. Instead of time to make the donuts, it's time to raise the taxes. And it talks about all the contractual obligations that our lovely people on the school committees, who I typically refer to as the spenders, and having spent 8 years on the Salem School Committee of Salem, Mass., I was in the thick of the beast of the belly. Before moving to Georgetown and being on the Board of Selectmen there. A lot of people get on these boards and they want to do the best they absolutely can. And they're wonderful and great people, but they forget about that it's my dollar and your dollar. And they want to be friends down at the taverns and friends around town. So they're doling out incredible raises, even in this economy. That's what my column is about. You know, it's just about, can we just throttle off a little bit, folks, and just be a little bit more responsible and reasonable and not be doling out these incredible raises. And it's happening in all your town meetings right now. Georgetown's there. They're discussing about potentially throwing out another Proposition 2.5 sidestep is what I refer to it. It's the, putting out another debt exclusion. It's a way around Proposition 2.5 to borrow more money. Not a good thing.
Yeah.
All right, Lonnie.
Nothing exciting, just about taxes. Sorry for bothering you on that.
No, not at all. We love to talk about taxes, especially since we're the ones paying them.
You got it.
All right, Lonnie Brennan, former selectman in Georgetown, former candidate against Barbara Lattaian for state representative, and hopefully you're going to be very active in this campaign, whether it's the Barry Feingold seat, whether it's the Babs Lattaian seat, whether it's the Sue Tucker seat. Hopefully you'll stay involved.
Looking forward to getting rid of some of these bodies.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Have a good day.
All right, 978-454-4980 is the phone number. We've only got about 7 minutes. I can't believe the first hour is almost completely over. So let's just talk. Let's just chat a little bit up to news about last Saturday, Paul.
Okay.
He looks at me like, Saturday?
Well, we were here.
Is that a day?
Are you talking about what happened after this?
Well, hello?
When we went to the retro.
Yes.
Okay.
I hate you so much. This is why Michelle is going to be replacing you at some point.
And we're all looking forward to that.
I know I am. That's for sure. So we went to Tep Theater Restaurant. It's a nice Cambodian restaurant on Chelmsford Street here in Lowell last week after the program. And Paul said, "Yeah, we need to talk about this next week." So then I get him a week later on the show, and I go, "Hey, let's talk about it." And he goes, "Well, okay then. It was good."
I've got two witnesses here that just heard you say, "Let's talk about Saturday." You
yes.
didn't say anything about the restaurant, so I'm thinking, okay, let's talk about Saturday.
Wow. Michelle, if after the show today we go out to Dunkin' Donuts, and then next week you come in and I go, hey, let's talk about what happened last Saturday, you'll probably know what I'm talking about, right?
I'm not sure.
You're hired.
I think the show, too.
Thank you. But the restaurant, thank you. Thank you very much. The restaurant was very good. The food was incredibly tasty, and I don't say that about food a lot. But everything that they gave us, what was the name of the place again?
It was called Tep Theater Restaurant. It's on Chelmsford Street right here in Lowell. Cambodian food, great Khmer
Every
food.
Piece of food. And they gave us, what, about five, six, seven
pieces
of food?
It just kept coming. The food just kept coming. It just
Every
kept coming
piece
and coming
was tastier
and coming.
Than the one before.
Yep.
It was really.
And then as we're leaving, Paul says, "Wow, you got like the VIP treatment. They just kept bringing out food and bringing. Do you get this everywhere you go?" Yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, welcome to my world."
Yeah, I said, "What a gig you've got."
Yeah, it's great. I go places I never have to pay. It's almost like hanging out with Will and Antigua.
You get you get free food coming at you. You've got pretty interns that work for you. You've got all
life
kinds
is
of things.
Life is good for as long as it lasts. Knock on wood, life is good. I don't know. It could all fall apart tomorrow, but until it does, I'm having the time of my
life. But I've never had Cambodian food before in my life.
I haven't either. By the way.
That was my first time.
And here's what I liked. I liked the duck was good. I've had duck before, and it seemed a little too gamey for me when I had it before.
Yep.
I don't know what they did with it, how they marinated it, but it didn't taste very gamey at all. I really liked the duck. But I was so full by the time the duck came because we had the ribeye steak, we had the spring rolls, we had that. I don't even know what they called it, but they had an appetizer. It was like a meat sauce. Remember the meat sauce?
Yes.
That they put on, I don't even know what it was, but it was just really good. What else did we have? We had all, the steak teriyaki was good.
What was that thing with the rice? Do you remember the?
The rice broccoli dish was good.
That was very good.
We had shrimp noodles
were
good.
That very first thing that came out, it was like, I don't know, it almost looked like, what do you call those? Cocoa Crispy things that... remember the block?
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what it's called.
It looked like a rice cake.
Yes, a rice
cake. A Rice Krispie?
Yeah, like a rice cake.
Like a rice cake kind of thing with the stuff on top of it.
Right, stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what these things were, but they were extremely delicious.
This is not Dining with Dino, by the way.
Yeah, no.
It was delicious.
We've got a long way to go.
Whatever it was.
So, all right. I was hoping we could kill like 6 minutes with that. Paul is just like a wet blanket on everything.
Oh, was I just wet?
Yeah. That's all right. Look, I derive my identity by picking on you. You know that, right?
Yes.
Okay, as long as he understands where everything stands. 978-454-4980. So we had fun. We went to Tep Theater. We hung out with Sal Tabit, who was our guest last week. And Paul came, and we sat down, and they just kept bringing more and more food. And again, I had never tried Cambodian food before. I was a little nervous because I'm one of these kinds of people that up until 4 or 5 years ago never tried anything different. And thanks to Paula, she got me interested in sushi and Korean food and all this other stuff. And so now I'm actually getting brave, and I'm going over to Tep Theater with Paul and Sal Tabit, and I'm thinking, I don't know what they're going to serve me. Is this going to be like Eye of Newt, or I have no idea what they're going to bring out?
Well, the first thing I asked you, Tom, is, are you sure that they have American food there? That's the first thing I needed to know.
Yeah, they had
before I came.
Yeah, they had the ribeye steak. That was kind of
American. we didn't even bother.
Yeah, we didn't even need to get to the American food.
What prompted you to go?
Well, Tep Theater is a great Cambodian restaurant that we've heard about for years and years. And I don't know, they've probably only been there for 6 months, but shh, don't tell anybody. and I just keep hearing how great this place was, so we decided we were going to go try and try out some of the food. No, that didn't work?
No, it didn't work.
Now
tell the truth.
All right, it's because they're advertising in the Valley Patriot, so I had to go and take pictures of the dishes for their ad. And I said, if we're going to go take pictures of food, we might as well eat the food we're taking pictures of, right?
Right.
So I invited everybody after the show, and we invited all the listeners. It was great. We had like 300 or 400 people showed up.
At least.
And the people lined up outside the door. It was really kind of interesting to see, you know, how all this stuff works. But
now, has Paul or Michelle ever had Cambodian food?
Yeah. I have not.
Yeah, I have. I went to the Elephant Walk in Waltham during restaurant week.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the best food I've ever had. I remember it being very cold, but it was very good.
All right, so you need to come with us some afternoon, maybe today, maybe some other day.
Let's do it.
To Tep Theater, because now that they've signed on for a long-term contract with us, I'm going to be eating there a lot. One of the things that I do with the Valley Patriot, and I think everybody ought to do this, I vote with my feet. If someone's going to advertise and they're going to support this radio station, Cafe Madrid, I'm going to go eat at Cafe Madrid. Yes? No, speak into the microphone. You can go ahead.
My friend is a dental assistant at Chancellor Dental, and the doctor she works with, his wife owns it.
Oh, nice.
And it's very awesome.
Oh, very good.
Does that mean we get discounts?
So when it comes to like eating food, when it comes to buying products, cleaning products, I go to Quintana, Quintana's cleaning products in Haverhill because they advertise with us. So we go and we spend our money on places that support this station and support my newspaper. And of course, we talk about it on the air because it helps out our advertisers a little bit. And so if you are out there and you want to advertise on this show or on the Valley Patriot, you ought to be calling us because not only will you get our readers, you'll get us. You might not actually want that. If you decide you don't want that, let us know. We won't show up. But if you want our money, we'll certainly be happy to come and give you some of it. 978-45. Okay, big topics in the next hour. Wilfredo LaBoy, 978-454-4980 is the phone number.
here on the Paying Attention Radio Program.
Cause every day there's a war to fight, and if I win or lose, never mind, as long as you're on my shoulder. Every night I used to cry out against the wall, but now I've got a shoulder that can lean on. Swear to me, you won't be gone. I'm ready for the good times, I'm ready for the good times, ready to get it on. I'm ready for the good times, I'm ready for the good times, now that I'm not alone.
You know what happens if you're not paying attention?
If we just reduce the city council back to a reasonable $5,200 stipend a year, which is what they used to get, the city of Lawrence, but taxpayers like you, Sharon, would save $100,000 a year from that one move alone. Enough is enough. Enough is enough in Lawrence. Enough is enough in Beacon Hill. Let's have some accountability. If we've got to rescue Lawrence, let's do it, but let's do it with professional, detached people who are actually going to cut where it needs to be cut and get the city back on track.
So don't miss a minute. Paying Attention with Tom Duggan.
Prestando atención con Tomás Duggan on Paying Attention Radio Show.
Shakira. Just not right. Is the phone number here on the Paying Attention Radio Program. Everybody gets it. Even Shakira gets it. No, she doesn't get it. Someday, though, we're going to get Shakira on this program. Hey, we got Eddie Money, right? We got Eddie Money just called into the show one day, like, out of the blue. So I want to talk to Tom Duggan. Timmy says, Eddie Money is on the line. I'm like, yeah, okay. We went on for, like, another 20 minutes before I realized he was serious. That was the week Paul wasn't here.
Hey, it's the Money Man, Eddie Money. Where's the party? Right here with my good buddy, Tom Duggan. Where else? WCAT. Meow.
See that? Get Eddie Money. Now, if that doesn't impress you, well, maybe 30 years ago.
No, are you saying that Eddie Money just felt like calling up WCAP in Lowell?
Yes.
Out of nowhere?
Yes.
And saying, hey, how you doing? My name is Eddie Money.
Yes. Ask Timmy. Timmy took the phone call. We were in
no
the middle
preparation.
We were in the middle of talking about something else, and Timmy said, Eddie Money just called, but you're in the middle of a discussion, and I asked him to call back. So I knew he was, like, full of crap, because if Eddie Money really called the show, you're not going to tell him to call back. You're going to just go right into Eddie Money. So he says, but he says he promises he's going to call back. So, like, an hour later, we're in mid-topic of something else. He goes, Eddie Money's on the line. So I'm like, yeah, okay. All right, Mr. Money, you're on the air. And it was really Eddie Money. It was great.
That was right before he played in Lowell, right?
No, he played at Tupelo Music Hall in Salisbury, which is now called Blue Ocean Music Hall. They changed their name April 1st. And we had decided in the Valley Patriot to do a free ad for the Eddie Money concert because I love Eddie Money. So when I found out he was coming, I said, even though they're not advertising with me, I'm going to put a free ad in for the Eddie Money show at Tupelo Music Hall so all of my friends will see it. We'll all go together. That'll be fun. And his manager saw the ad, and the owner of Tupelo Music Hall saw the ad. They called me before the show and said, can we call in and promote the Eddie Money show on Saturday? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then the next thing I know, Timmy's telling me Eddie Money's on the line. I'm going, yeah, okay. But it was really him. It was a great interview, too. He grabbed me after his concert. He said that was one of the most personable interviews that I've ever done, which I thought was really neat because most people ask him about music stuff, and I'm asking him about his ex-wife. So, you know, he really kind of liked that. He thought it was cathartic, although he didn't use that word.
I'm not sure anybody knows what that word means. 978-454.
It's a medical term.
So you did know that he might call.
No. I thought it was going to be like the owner or one of the managers of the music hall calling to promote the Eddie Money show.
I see.
And the next thing I know, it's actually Eddie Money. So maybe someday Shakira will be calling into the... That's what I'll do. Next time Shakira comes to me, we'll put a free ad in for Shakira. And
a free ad. There you go.
Maybe her manager will see it. And, you know, who knows? Maybe. All right. Let's get off to some serious topics. What do you think? Huh? Everybody? Anybody?
Let's do it.
All right. On Thursday night in the city of Lawrence, all of these shenanigans, all of these accusations, everything that we've been talking about since like June of last year when the district attorney's office and the state police raided Superintendent Wilfredo LaBoy's office on Essex Street in Lawrence. They also raided his home and his car and his BlackBerry and everything else they could raid. And ever since then, we've been talking about all of the allegations against the superintendent of schools. We've been asking since then why it is that the school committee wasn't at least in the process of trying to fire Wilfredo LaBoy. Not because I wanted them to be firing Wilfredo LaBoy, just that the school board members at the time privately were all saying, we want to fire this guy. So I kept asking them privately, why won't you fire this guy? It was because none of them had the stones to do it. I mean, really, basically, that's what it came down to. And we waited. And on privately, behind the scenes, they kept telling me, I'm not going to mention names, but members of the committee kept telling me, they want Wilfredo LaBoy gone. They want to fire Wilfredo LaBoy. And I kept saying, then why don't you make the motion? Remember, Paul, I interviewed Martina Cruz back in June. And I asked her, you hate Wilfredo LaBoy. You say at every meeting why he needs to go, but you never make a motion. Why don't you step up to the plate and walk the walk? And her answer was, I'm going to do that what? Next week. Well, next week came.
Could I say your name properly?
Martina Cruz.
There you go.
So Martina Cruz, she said at school committee meeting, and she said nothing. She said nada. She has nothing to say. So I waited and I waited. Every week we came in and said, Martina Cruz, still not making motions, still not interested in firing the superintendent, but she gets up at every meeting and says why he needs to be fired. She says after the meetings why he needs to be fired. But nobody wanted to pull the trigger. Well, this week they pulled the trigger.
Trigger was pulled.
Finally, after all of this, we filtered into the Lawrence School Committee meeting room on 255 Essex Street, expecting 300, 400 people because there's so much outrage about Wilfredo LaBoy, right? No, not really. It's like 9 people. Most of them school department employees. The rest of them were lawyers. And, of course, Mr. Mali. We love Mr. Mali.
I'm sure he'll be calling in
later. I hope
later.
He calls in. That's one guy. I never get sick of that guy, ever. So Mr. Mali saved my seat, thank God, up in the front. And I thought I was going to have to squeeze into the room. Mm. I get there, and there's like, okay, don't hold me to the number, but there's like 6 police officers at this event. And there's like 9 people there. There were almost more police officers and security guys than there were people. And I'm thinking to myself, why do we need all of, I mean, there's real crime going on in Lawrence, honest to God. A couple of nights ago, I had my scanner on. They were chasing a guy with a gun through the Hancock Projects. Like, there's real crime in the city of Lawrence going on. A gunshot in the Beacon Projects on Tuesday night. There's a guy was holding his girlfriend hostage at the Beacon Projects last Sunday night. So there's a lot of real crime going on in Lawrence, and I'm looking at this very calm school committee meeting with his lawyers with suits on, just kind of talking, and wondering why we have 6 police officers, if not more, not to mention 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 7 school security guards, all right, in this room of, like, not a lot of people. And I was a little bit late getting there. I was great that Paula, while I'm driving around trying to deliver papers and get to this meeting, which I thought started at 7, but it started at 5. Paula took her cell phone, put it next to the TV, because we get Verizon Fios, so we can watch all the meetings in other communities. And I have my earpiece on, my Bluetooth, and I'm actually listening to the TV at home as to what's going on while I'm out delivering papers trying to get to the meeting. So I get to the meeting, I see the cops, I walk in, I put my tape recorder down, and I'm waiting for LexisNexis. They were illegally searching people's backgrounds. They were illegally pulling up people's criminal backgrounds. They were illegally pulling up people's credit reports. But I didn't hear any of that. I was waiting for them to talk about how members of the school committee who voted on a printing press then used the printing press to print their own campaign materials and how somehow Wilfredo LaBoy is responsible for that. I didn't hear any of that either. I was waiting to hear that state and federal dollars that were filtered into the city of Lawrence were mishandled or misused or even, you know, stolen. And I didn't hear any of that. What I did hear was 4 or 5 witnesses that testified Number one, every single one of them, for all that we've heard over the last year and a half about how everyone that works with Wilfredo LaBoy hates this guy. He's abrasive. He's a bully. He's a jerk. He's demanding. He belittles people. I was waiting.
And those are his good points.
Right. And I was waiting to hear, as each person got up, now that Wilfredo LaBoy is not their boss anymore, that this guy was just evil incarnate. That he called me and he ordered me to go to his house to fix his computer. That he called me and ordered me to go to his house and take his garbage out, and I was afraid for my job, so I did it. That's what I was waiting to hear.
None of that.
None of it. What we heard was witness after witness after witness got up and said, well, Wilfredo LaBoy was a pleasure to work for. He was a great guy. He worked 100 hours a week. He was very demanding, but he didn't demand anything of us that he didn't demand of himself.
Very fair.
And I was shocked by that because all we've heard in the media, including on this show, and I'll take responsibility for being guilty for some of that, all we've heard is how Wilfredo LaBoy is the scum of the earth. That Wilfredo LaBoy is hated by everybody. Nobody wants this guy around, and he's got to go.
Yeah, I mean, if this guy isn't reason enough for a strong fiscal control board, I mean, then I don't know what it is. I mean, this guy mismanaged $187 million school budget.
How did? Let me get to you. Don't let me forget that. And we're gonna circle around back to that.
For years, I mean, this wasn't the first time they tried to fire the guy.
No, it is. This is the first time they've actually tried to fire the guy. They've wanted to fire the guy. They've cried about firing the guy. Right. They've promised to fire the guy, but never actually tried.
Are you actually feeling a little bad or guilty that you fed into this engine of speculation?
No, not at all. That's my job.
About this man and
his
negative attributes?
Because if anybody's been more fair with Wilfredo LaBoy, it's been me. There's nobody really who's been as fair with Wilfredo LaBoy as I have. While the Tribune was kicking the crap out of this guy because a teacher was fired for bringing lasagna to class, like somehow that's his fault, we came in and we talked about that issue and really laid it where it belonged, on the principal. When a kid went to school one day and they were having a drinking party in the cafeteria, somehow that became Wilfredo LaBoy's fault.
Was he providing the alcohol?
He wasn't providing the alcohol. He wasn't even on the premises when it happened, but somehow the stories that started coming out from the Alabama Eagle, the Eagle Tribune, which is headquartered in Alabama, not locally, all we heard anytime there was any accusation of anything in the Lawrence Public Schools that has like 12,000 students in it, it was somehow, why did Wilfredo LaBoy do this? Like, he's the one who did it. And it was his fault. And I think we've been very, very fair with Wilfredo LaBoy to say these are allegations, that he can't be responsible for what happens in every school. But we've also come in and said the things that he was responsible for. And now that we've heard what we heard Thursday night, I don't, to answer your question, feel bad about being part of the piling on, because the piling on that we have done has been stuff for what we believe he actually did do, not all the other piling on stuff that everyone else did. You know, the lasagna, the trip to Italy, all that other stuff.
I don't remember. Where did you stand on the LaBoy versus LaGirl situation?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm really glad you brought that up. What? Amy McGovern, who was a member of the Lawrence School Committee, was a very good friend of ours. I campaigned for her. I helped her get elected, helped her get reelected. When she had her spat, her physical tussle with Superintendent LaBoy a few years ago, we were with Amy McGovern, 100%. 100% we thought Amy McGovern was correct. I thought she was correct. Paula thought she was correct. Chuck and Ralph thought she was correct. The Valley Patriot took a stand. And so those people who say, and I talked to Sammy Reyes this week about this again, there's a school of thought out there that we sold out. The Valley Patriot sold out to Wilfredo LaBoy because he was buying ads with us. And Sammy's contention was, if you go back and you look at the stories, we were kicking the living crap out of Wilfredo LaBoy till he started buying ads. And then all of a sudden, we were writing these glowing things about Wilfredo LaBoy because we're in the tank, right? So I reminded him, Paul, and I'm glad you brought this up.
That's why I'm here, Tom.
That around the time Wilfredo LaBoy started buying these ads in the Valley Patriot was right after the time that Amy McGovern quit the Lawrence School Committee. Now, up until that time, we were kicking the crap out of Wilfredo LaBoy because we had someone on the school committee feeding us documents, showing us that he was going to 1 Mill Street and ordering steak and duck and paying it with the school department money, sending us copies of receipts in Disney World for tolls and all these other things, sending us copies of cell phone bills where, you know, people were spending up to thousands of dollars in cell phone bills that, you know, the taxpayers are paying for. When Amy left, Sammy Reyes wasn't feeding me documents. Peter LaRocque wasn't feeding me documents. Mike Sullivan wasn't feeding me documents. So the only person who was feeding me documents when Amy McGovern left was Wilfredo LaBoy. He's the one that was emailing me stuff saying, hey, look, our test scores are up. Would you like to write a story about it? I'd write the story. We'd put the figures in the paper. And now Sammy Reyes says, well, we think those numbers were wrong. You were propagating false information. My question is, why didn't you call me at the time and tell me? Why didn't you call me and say those numbers were wrong? In the following edition, I would have written a story that I interviewed Sammy Reyes, and he says those dropout numbers are wrong. Those graduation numbers are wrong. This is what they really are.
Or Sammy could have written an article with all the statistics that he knows.
Absolutely. So it's the easy accusation to make that we sold out to Wilfredo LaBoy because around that time he started buying ads and we started writing positive stuff. But it really had to do with the fact that from the time Amy McGovern left on, to this very minute, by the way, to this very minute, I have not had one school board member send me copies of documents that shows Wilfredo LaBoy doing anything wrong. Not taking people out to eat, not going to Disney World, not cell phone records, not illegal purchases, nothing. So we go with the information that we have. And I bring all this up, and I thank Paul for bringing all this up, because you really need to not just look at the way things look. You need to look at the way things are. So when I sat at this meeting Thursday, what we heard was, I'm going to play some of these clips for you. What we heard was allegations that the superintendent, not that he was stealing money, not that he was doing things that were terribly criminal, but that he had alcohol in his office. Let's start with clip number one, Timmy, when you're ready. You know, when you get a chance. I don't want to stress you out over there. I know how hard he works.
No, the legs were up. Did you see
it? Yeah, I saw it. He's
very comfortable, yeah. Tom. Yeah, now you're asking him to do something.
I almost felt bad asking him when I looked over.
Yeah. What time did you guys get here?
I'm sorry.
That's right. Timmy does.
So during this thing, during this hearing, acting superintendent, the current superintendent in Lawrence, Mary Lou Bergeron, was asked to testify. She was brought up. She was sworn in by Willie Lantigua, which is just funny beyond funny to begin with. And she was asked to read the policy that states you cannot have alcohol in school department premises. There's a Lawrence school department policy. I suspect every school department has one, that you can't have alcohol in school department property.
Opened or unopened.
Yeah, any alcohol. You can't have it on the property. She was asked to read the policy, which she did. She was asked to look at the signature at the bottom of the paper that she was given, and it had Wilfredo LaBoy's signature. When he was hired, he has to sign all these things saying he understands this is the policy. And it looked pretty bad for Wilfredo LaBoy until his lawyer started asking questions. Clip number one, this was stunning.
Or rather, let me, isn't it true that the implementation of this particular policy over the years with regards to alcohol is that no alcohol be consumed on the premises? Isn't that pretty much it?
Well, we're not to have alcohol on the premises.
Well, have you ever had alcohol on the premises?
No.
No.
Have you ever given gifts of wine?
I have given gifts to people, yes.
No!
Including what you did, what you've done in the past, is you've brought wine bottles into this building for purposes of giving people gifts of wine, correct?
I have done that, yes.
All right. And including gifts of wine to Dr. LaBoy, correct?
Can you pause that, Timmy?
I think I may have done 1 year. Yeah, I probably did do 1 year.
So some of those alcoholic bottles might have been
from
her?
Came from Mary Lou Bergeron! That should have been the headline in the Eagle Tribune. You want to talk about bad reporting? That should have been the headline in the Eagle Tribune the next day, that now that we fired Wilfredo LaBoy for having alcohol on school premises, how about the acting superintendent who just admitted under oath that, no, she's never brought alcohol onto school property. Oh, wait, you mean the Secret Santa thing? Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, I brought that in.
Why
that was me.
Alcohol. I mean, why can't you give a toy? Why not like a little truck or something for his kid? Okay.
Yeah. Like,
why does that have to be alcohol?
How about a gift certificate to like a wine place or something? The answer. Oh, let's finish this out and then we'll talk about the answer. So here we have acting superintendent Mary Lou Bergeron, who was the assistant superintendent under Wilfredo LaBoy. Wilfredo LaBoy's been on suspension. This is the firing of the superintendent because he's got alcohol on school premises, and the woman who is the current acting superintendent first says, no, I never did. Alcohol in the premise? No, I would never do that. Well, what about, did you ever bring wine in for Secret Santa? Well, yeah, okay, maybe I did that. Did you ever give alcohol to Wilfredo LaBoy? Yeah, I might have done that too. So when you think about this Anwar, this liquor cabinet that was in Wilfredo LaBoy's office, some of that liquor came from the current acting superintendent. What? Where was that headline in the local daily? Like, seriously, where was that? Oh, let's finish this out. This gets so much more fun.
trying to think. I may have done 1 year. Yeah, I probably did do 1 year of wine.
And this has been something that has, not necessarily commonly, but certainly not uncommonly, been a practice here within this very building, where people have given gifts of wine or booze to other individuals at the holidays or for birthdays, correct?
I don't know if I'd say a common practice, but yes, I've seen it done.
Right. As a matter of fact, this past Christmas, wasn't there an exchange of wine amongst employees here in this very building?
I'm not aware there was exchange of wine this past Christmas.
At a secret Santa? Was there a secret Santa?
We did have a secret Santa, yes.
And isn't it true that there were gifts of wine in that secret Santa that were exchanged?
I cannot say I saw anyone give a gift of wine this past Christmas.
But you are aware, not just from your own personal experience, because you yourself, and thank you for admitting, that you yourself have given gifts of wine. But others have been giving gifts of wine and booze here in this facility, correct?
Likely true.
And again, it was the understanding that this was not alcohol to be consumed on the premises, correct?
Correct, and not to be maintained on the premises.
Right. Are you saying that there's a distinction that permits possession of alcohol or wine on the premises as long as it's not maintained on the premises?
No, I'm saying if it's given as a gift, it's to be taken home when you give it as a gift.
Okay. But just so that we're clear with my question, Doctor, you're certainly not saying that there's a distinction that permits possession and distribution on school property that is permissible as long as it's not maintained on the property? You're not saying that, are you?
I'm saying that the gift may have been given on the property, but was not to remain on the property.
Okay. But if you could answer my question.
Then I would say, no, you are correct. There is no distinction.
Right. So even you yourself and others here, they not only have on a yearly basis, people have been giving, possessing, and distributing alcohol and wine in this building annually. Fair?
Probably.
And no one has ever raised a complaint, have they?
Not to my knowledge.
Including you, the acting superintendent, correct?
No, I had not.
Wow. How about that? Now, not for anything, and this is, I think, the difference between the Valley Patriot and other newspapers. I can go to a meeting and listen to that and immediately know that's a headline. Immediately know that that should be the story. That should be what this whole thing gets framed around. That, yes, they fired Wilfredo LaBoy and tell the story about what happened at that meeting, but there also should have been a side story that the current acting superintendent of schools in Lawrence has admitted now, under oath, at a public meeting, that, yeah, well, first she said no, and then she said, oh, yeah, kind of, and then it was clear that, well, it was actually more than kind of. It was like, yeah, it was, I brought in not just wine, like, once. It wasn't like a one-time thing where I forgot to leave it in my car. It was in my bag. I brought it in. It was, yeah, we did secret Santas. We had parties. There was wine being exchanged. Everybody's happy.
There seems to be, Tom, there seems to be three distinctions to be made here. Having it on the premises, maintaining it on the premises,
yes,
and consuming it on the premises.
Right. All three of which are against the policy.
Yeah. Now, she did one of those three, and apparently he did one of those three. He maintained it.
Yeah, he did two. He had it on the premises, and he maintained it on the premises. So I think where I'm going with this is that, and again, I'm not going to be an apologist for Wilfredo LaBoy for anything that he did do wrong. But let's just call it like it is here. You're going to fire a guy not for LexisNexis, not for stealing money, not for misappropriating money, not for criminal acts, not for allowing school board members to use the printing press for their campaigns, especially when at least two or three of those school board members voted on buying that printing press. None of that was brought up. You know why? Because this was a total whitewash. Willie Lantigua, as the mayor of Lawrence, his name is in the indictment. fact. The mayor of Lawrence, the chairman of the school committee, who presided over this meeting, his name is in the indictment. And why is his name in the indictment? Because according to Essex County District Attorney John Blodgett's office, Willie Lantigua's state rep campaign 3 years ago benefited from materials that were printed at the Lawrence School Department. So it shouldn't be shocking to anyone that when Willie Lantigua drew up the charges against Wilfredo LaBoy for this firing and gave it to the attorneys, that lo and behold, there was no discussion at all about campaign flyers being made at the school department for candidates. You know why? He was one of them. He was one of them. And he didn't recuse himself from this meeting, as I believe he should have. How do you sit as the chairman of the school committee and fire a guy for using the print shop to give to candidates campaign material paid for by us, the taxpayers, when you're the guy that he gave the stuff to? It's just shocking to me. My head just swims when I think about this
stuff. It is amazing to me how, take State Rep Barry Feingold, for example. I can't believe that someone who has so many close friends and associates who have been indicted or have at least been under investigation, including himself, have said so little. What's going on here?
Yeah, you're right. I think Barry should have taken a leadership position on this, State Representative Barry Feingold, and he should have come out and he should have said something about it. Anything. The only thing that he's really said was, I believe in the Daily Paper, he knew nothing about it.
Well, all I get out of the paper, all I get out of his comments in the paper are obfuscation.
Yeah, I think...
it seems like he's hiding something.
Look, whether Barry knew or he didn't know, we don't know. We're never going to know. Maybe we will, but... You'll play some more clips when we come back? Yeah, something cold, like a Coke or something. All right, we'll be back after this break. Timmy says we have to take a break, so we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what the other charges were against Wilfredo LaBoy and the vote and why here on the Paying Attention Radio Program, where everybody gets it, even Superintendent Wilfredo... Oh, fired Superintendent Wilfredo LaBoy.
Again, City Council Patrick Blanchett, guest host today. I want to thank Tom Duggan for allowing me to have this opportunity to be a guest host.
You know what happens if you're not paying attention. Not
and correct. Once again, under your leadership, you've allowed politics to take the wrong course.
No, you're trying
course.
To interject politics into a non-political situation.
Really?
There
okay.
was no politics. Oh, really?
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're the greatest lobbyist. Right. I will yield to you that you are the greatest lobbyist that ever lived.
Yes,
I'm going to send you to your corners in a couple of seconds.
So don't miss a minute. Paying Attention with Tom Duggan.
Is the phone number. 15 more minutes, Paul. 15 more minutes. I'm all excited. Great. And Paul Morano's here with our food. This is excellent. All right. So back to the Wilfredo LaBoy thing. Lawrence School Superintendent Wilfredo LaBoy, he was fired Thursday night. The accusations against Wilfredo LaBoy were, well, let's just say weak at very best. He was fired for having alcohol in his office. He was fired for allowing school department employees to go to his home and do work on his home. But then when the witnesses got up and talked about the work that they actually did on his home. Well, one guy was a computer tech, and they asked him what he did when he went to Wilfredo LaBoy's home. He ended up working on a school department computer that the school superintendent uses for work that he actually has at home. He also worked on another computer that he admitted he doesn't know if the school department owns it or doesn't own it. In fact, the city prosecutor, Attorney Mullen, who might be a great lawyer, and maybe he just didn't have a lot of material to work with because Willie didn't give him a lot of material to work with, but didn't really do a great job, in my opinion anyway, sat through. This is my third superintendent firing that I've sat through. And I have to be honest that this was the weakest case I've ever seen. You had school department employees admitting that they went to the superintendent's home and took out his garbage. Say it isn't so. They took out his garbage? My God. tar and feather him on the next rail out. The reason I'm making fun of all this is because it seems as though with the accusations that have been made, with the criminal indictments that have come down, with all of the things that school board members say that they know about, we didn't really hear any of it Thursday night.
Why?
Paul says off microphone, why? I asked the school department's attorney that very question after the event, but we're going to get to that in a second. There was one issue that had to do, that I think was probably one issue of the 10 things that he was charged with that I think did have some merit. And that was that he allowed, and various people testified, that Wilfredo LaBoy himself was intimately involved in either asking or ordering people to print menus for his son's pizza shop. And then we find out, very interesting, we find out that Wilfredo LaBoy sent a letter to the Ethics Commission asking if it was a conflict of interest. Let's play clip number two there, Timmy, when you get a chance. This is now Acting Superintendent Mary Lou Bergeron still on the stand talking about her knowledge of Wilfredo LaBoy's involvement with his son's pizza shop.
Dr. Bergeron, there's a letter there dated from a Mr. Cole, September 11th. Of 2007 from the State Ethics Commission to Dr. LaBoy. I ask you to take a look at that document. I'm going to represent to you that it is a document inquiring as to the from the State Ethics Commission of September of 2007. And I'll ask if that document refreshes your memory, do you recall seeing that document?
Honestly, no, I do not recall seeing this document.
Okay. The second document is a letter from Dr. LaBoy to Mr. Cole at the State Ethics Commission, dated September 24th, 2007, fully disclosing the nature of his relationship with Sal LaPoli, including specificity with regards to the bidding process. Do you recall assisting Dr. LaBoy with the drafting of that letter?
I recall gathering information about the actual bidding process at one point. I don't recall if I helped write the letter, to tell you the truth.
But certainly now, having viewed those letters, that letter, and the contents of that letter, your memory is refreshed that Dr. LaBoy was looking for specificity with regards to the relationship he had with Sal LaPoli for purposes of disclosure to the State Ethics Commission.
Actually, this letter is basically about, yeah, the bidding process that we followed over the last several years.
Exactly.
Okay. So that his son was an employee at that time.
Mr. Chair, can we get a copy of that letter while the question is being asked so that way we can follow along?
Mary Lou Bergeron, Acting Superintendent, has now testified that Wilfredo LaBoy asked the Ethics Commission for a ruling as to whether or not his son could work at Sal LaPoli's, whether or not his relationship with Sal LaPoli was unethical, whether or not he could do business with Sal LaPoli. And according to at least what we just heard, Mary Lou Bergeron said, well, yeah, he did seek that guidance.
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
My current boss used to work at the Riverwalk in Lawrence.
Yes. Yes.
And I actually, whenever this first news story broke about Wilfredo LaBoy, he had told me that, I believe Sal went up to my boss, Greg, and asked him to give Wilfredo LaBoy's,
son,
a job at the restaurant.
Right. Which they did.
I'm just giving you firsthand information that actually took place that I know of.
Right. And Wilfredo LaBoy's defense is that before his son got a job working for Sal's Riverwalk, Sal LaPoli, who's got fine, fine pizza, we love Sal. Before he did that, because Sal LaPoli does business with the school department, he sought advice from the Ethics Commission as to whether or not his son could take the job. The Ethics Commission said, yeah, it's not a conflict of interest. Your son can take the job. He also asked for, at least according to what Mary Lou Bergeron just testified to, that he asked about the bidding process to make sure that the bidding process that Sal was going through to do business with the schools, whether or not it was above board. And Mary Lou Bergeron testifies, yes, it was above board. So you've got alcohol. You've got people taking out his garbage. You've got his son working for Sal Lopoli. And the only thing, as I said, that it seems as though there might have been some kind of teeth to out of these 10 charges that we looked at were the menus that Wilfredo LaBoy had printed on the Lawrence Public Schools printing press. They printed 700 menus for his son at, I believe they averaged it to like 10 cents a copy. So that's about $70. Certainly not a felony. I'm not saying it's right. If you steal...
Did he pay it back?
What's up? I don't believe that he did. I don't believe that he did. So is it a felony? No, it's not a felony. Is it wrong? Absolutely it's wrong. Is it against the law? It's absolutely against the law. Is that in and of itself a fireable offense? The Lawrence School Committee said yes, save one. Sammy Reyes, the guy who was the whistleblower, the guy who went to the district attorney and gave them all of the information saying, I believe Wilfredo LaBoy is a criminal, and here's the proof. It was Sammy Reyes' complaints that led to the superintendent's office being raided, his home being raided, his BlackBerry being confiscated, his computers being taken. And at the end of the day, at the end of all of this, it was Sammy Reyes who said, I can't vote to fire him just based on what you've presented.
I agree with Sammy Reyes.
Say it again, Paul.
I said I agree with Sammy Reyes.
I think I do too. Now, that doesn't mean that when the criminal trial comes out, that the DA is not going to have more evidence of other things, and we might feel differently when that happens. But if we just look at what happened Thursday night, if I was a juror from Swampscott,
just
didn't know anything about what was going on and just listened to what happened Thursday night, I would have been voting the way Sammy Reyes voted.
Not ethical, some of those things. Not good.
Absolutely.
But fireable offense? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either, except for the menus. Because he admitted, or at least people who worked for him have admitted, that it was Wilfredo LaBoy himself who put forward in motion this printing of menus for his son's business, and because it's his son and an immediate family member, that's against the law. Clearly it's against the law.
$70 worth?
About $70 worth.
I think he should be reprimanded, pay back that $70, but I still don't know if that's a fireable offense.
Here's why I would have to vote that way, and here's I think the reason why Sammy voted that way, and I interviewed him. We'll play that clip in the next hour. Because if Wilfredo LaBoy now goes into court for wrongful termination and sues for $400,000, which you know he's going to do and probably already has filed, like, you know, the next day, I don't know contract law. I'm not a lawyer. But I suspect that when they go in before a jury or a judge and they look at whether he was wrongfully terminated or not, they're going to just look at what was presented that night. Now, when that trial comes up, when that civil trial for wrongful termination comes up, it could be 6-8 months from now, Wilfredo LaBoy might be convicted of a crime by then. Maybe he won't, but maybe he will, but that's going to be irrelevant. Because I believe, and I could be wrong, if there's a lawyer out there, please call and let us know what the procedure is. I believe that what's going to happen is they're going to look at what happened Thursday night. They're going to look at the record. They're going to look at the charges. They're going to look to see if whether or not the city was able to effectively prove those charges and that those charges are enough to fire the superintendent or not. And I suspect, if you get these jurors from Swampscott or from Athol who don't know the situation, they're going to be looking at it the way Sammy Reyes did.
Do we know, Tom, in his in the superintendent's contract, that if in the fine print it states that the superintendent will or can be fired for the smallest infraction of any of those things that they mentioned Thursday night?
Yeah, not specifically, but you bring up a good point. Because of Mike Sweeney, who sat on the school committee 4 or 5 years ago, when Wilfredo LaBoy's contract became renewed, when it was up for renewal, Mike Sweeney voted against it and said that he would not vote for it, and Sweeney was the swing vote, would not vote for to extend the superintendent's contract unless they changed it from just cause to fire the superintendent, which means you have to have legal reasons, to simply just cause. Not just cause, but cause. So you're right. At the end of the day, he might lose. They might say, look, your contract says they can get rid of you for cause. They can get rid of you just because they don't like you. But I also suspect that because they presented these 10 charges, they said these were the 10 reasons we're going to get rid of him, that they now have to sustain those reasons. I don't think that they did. I think they sustained one. I don't think having somebody who works 90 hours a week and doesn't get paid overtime during the workday go to your house and fix your school department computer I don't think that's a reason to fire anybody. I don't think having somebody go to your house and take your garbage out is a reason to fire anybody. What I wanted to see was I wanted to see more. I wanted to be able to walk out of there and say, whether I'm a friend of Alfredo LaBoy or not, the guy needs to be fired. And I just didn't see that.
Well, I mean, there's going to be, I'm sure, arguments about the letter versus the spirit of the law and of his contract. And there's going to be balances and imbalances about what you just said. You know, if he's been a diligent worker for all these years, all of that overtime that he worked without getting paid, can you balance that to maybe $60-$70 of using the printer? And he might have himself a good case.
I think it's 50-50 at best, too. I mean, seriously, can Lawrence afford another $400,000 to pay Wilfredo LaBoy, even if he is convicted of a crime later on? I don't think we can afford that. And I say again, as we go into the news break for the second time, as we get ready for Descontrol, which looks like it might have started early, this was a total whitewash. I firmly believe, and it took me a day to actually come to this conclusion of listening to these clips and going over it. I've come to the conclusion, maybe I'm wrong, that Willie Lantigua, the chief, decided to completely whitewash this out, to only go with the most minor offenses that he could present, so that A, his skeletons wouldn't come out, B, skeletons of other school board members wouldn't come out, and C, that Wilfredo LaBoy might actually be able to get a payday at the end of the day.
Wow, so this is a whole well-planned-out strategy from the mayor and these school committee members to cover their own rear ends.
I believe that's the case, and when I play the interview next hour of Attorney Mullen, who represented the city, I asked him why the case was so weak. You will be shocked at his answer. His answer, and you'll hear it for yourself after we come back, his answer was, I could only charge what the school committee told me to charge. And who's chairman of the school committee, folks? Willie Lantigua, the chief. Back after this on Paying Attention, where everybody gets it, even Willie Lantigua, the chief.
I listen every Saturday.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
This is Mayor Edward Bud Caulfield, and I listen to Paying Attention every Saturday right after the Warren Shaw Show. And Tommy, you bring out all the truth and the news to everyone in the Merrimack Valley.
And I could go on and on and on and on and on. And I could go on and 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 on.
You know what happens if you're not paying attention.
If you imagine the Republicans, the fiscally disciplined party, you know that Republican party? Bill Weld and Cellucci and Jane Swift almost doubled our debt, and we're now the heaviest debt burden state in the country. Look, we've got to grow this economy.
I don't want to cut you up, but did we not have Democrat legislatures during most of their term?
Weld, Cellucci, and Swift.
I gotcha.
The borrowing, yeah, we did. Look, it's a bipartisan problem.
That's right.
So don't miss a minute Paying Attention with Tom Duggan.
House is a brick house.
You're not right.
She's mighty, mighty. Just letting it all hang out. She's a brick.
Here you go. Just control.
House. I like Lady Stack. That's a fact. Ain't holding nothing back. House, she's a brick.
You're not right to me.
House. Well,
you're not right.
I think I get wrongfully accused of a lot of things.
All right, 978-454-4980 is the phone number here on the Paying Attention radio program. Tom Duggan, your host. Paul Morano is here. He's kind of coaching my intern and taking her away from very important duties. Like
He's showing her how to do his job so that he can just kind of move on.
Yeah, if that's what he's doing, that's fine. I don't mind that at all. I want to spend like another 10 or 15 minutes on this Wilfredo LaBoy stuff, then we're going to veer off to other things. I want to remind Paul your microphone is on, and of course the other microphones are on. 978-454-4980. So we're talking about Wilfredo LaBoy. We're talking about Thursday night. The Lawrence School Committee fired Wilfredo LaBoy. And I'm not saying that Wilfredo LaBoy shouldn't have been fired. I'm saying Wilfredo LaBoy shouldn't have been fired based on these charges. This was a total joke. And I know that there's a lot of people out there who wanted Wilfredo LaBoy gone. And they didn't care what the charges were. They just wanted him gone. And maybe they've got good reason. But let me tell you, when I sat on the school committee and they wanted to fire Jim Scully, and I say this a lot, but I think it needs to be repeated, and I think people need to be reminded. 6 months prior to Jim Scully being fired, I was calling for Jim Scully to be fired. I was calling for Jim Scully to be fired because we would take a vote, and we would ask Jim Scully to do something, and he would come to the next meeting and say it was done. And then I'd visit the Arlington school and find out it wasn't done. And I'd show up at a meeting and say, look, we took a vote. We ordered him to do something. He came to the next meeting and said he did it. 6 months later, I go to the Arlington school. It's not being done. This guy is violating votes of this committee. I want him gone. And I crickets from my committee members. Nobody wanted to do anything about Jim Scully at that moment. But then Jim Scully politically ran afoul of Robert Antonucci, who was the Department of Education, head of the Department of Education for the state. And suddenly they wanted to fire Jim Scully because he was stealing money. But from every single piece of evidence that I saw, Jim Scully never took a dime in his life. For all of his faults that I believed that he had as superintendent, I was not going to sit there and fire somebody for stealing money they didn't steal. So even though I was the guy calling for him to be fired 6 months earlier, even though I was the guy who said Jim Scully's not doing what we're asking him to do, I was not going to vote to fire a guy for stealing money he did not steal. And here we are some 10 years later, and Sammy Reyes finds himself in the exact same position. I think that's very interesting. That Sammy's the guy that was calling him for him to be fired. He's the guy that went to the DA and said there's criminal stuff going on. But he's also the guy that had the ethics and the morality to say, even though I want him fired, I'm certainly not going to fire him based on this. I think Sammy realizes now this was a whitewash, too. I asked, well, let's go to the closing arguments real quick. Here is part of Scott Gleason's closing argument in defense of Wilfredo LaBoy. He went first, then the city attorneys went next. So let's go with Scott Gleason's defense of Wilfredo LaBoy, and then we'll go to the closing arguments of Attorney Mullen. This will be clip number four there, Timmy. Yep, you got it.
And when Dr. LaBoy was first let go, we were here in June, the 25th, I believe, of 2009, when this committee said that they were going to suspend Dr. LaBoy because search warrants had been executed and there was rumor and innuendo. Well, if you recall those members who were present on that evening, this June past, I indicated then that there would be not a scintilla of evidence that would come out of those search warrants that were executed on his property, his computers, his home. His world was tipped upside down. Is there one scintilla of evidence before you tonight that has come out of that? The answer is no, because there was nothing there. I would urge this committee, now that the issues have been fully flushed out, to understand what was going on. Each and every one of your witnesses, the witnesses for your prosecutor, have come in and talked about the dedication, the hard work, the commitment of a man who didn't want to leave his job and his responsibility and asked others to do the lesser things so he could continue to do the work. He deserves your respect. He deserves your loyalty. And we would ask you for that. The fact that other people, that there has been a runaway freight train of innuendo, rumor, gossip, and dime dropping of no value, because all of it led to these search warrants and there isn't one shred of anything before you from all of those search warrants. Sometimes you just have to go by what you see. Do not listen to others, the innuendo and the slashing and burning. You have all the evidence in front of you. What is it? Do you really think that any jury is going to say to anybody, yes, Dr. LaBoy, that was a felony for you having booze in your office, just like everybody else is having parties and wine exchanges? Or you ask somebody, your grandkids are on an emergency, and go pick them up so I can continue the work of the city of Lawrence. Those are felonies? Who's kidding who? You have an obligation and a duty. to do the right thing and to not be overwhelmed with publicity coming out of a wild media. The evidence is before you. Your witnesses have talked about the greatness of this man and how hard he worked for you, and no one ever saw an illegal or unethical act. We're asking you for your support for that man who gave so much to you.
Pretty compelling, I think, when you look at just what was presented that night. Although I think it was a little disingenuous for Scott Gleason. By the way, I'm not a fan of Scott Gleason.
Well, we're going to have him canonized before he's dead. Yeah. Saint LaBoy.
Right.
From what we hear here.
I think almost everything he said was correct. Except I think it was a little disingenuous on his part to say that not a scintilla of evidence from the search warrants is true. That there's nothing there. Because after the search warrants, he was indicted. So obviously there's something there.
Two or three scintillas, I would say.
Yeah, maybe a couple of scintillas, right? Yeah. So, again, and I'm not about defending LaBoy, and I'm not about castigating LaBoy. I just want to go right down the middle like I'm a jury member, and I'm just looking just at the evidence that's being presented. And just based on the evidence that's being presented, it's a little disingenuous for Scott Gleason to say, although I think he did a great job, even despite the fact that I don't like the guy. You can't say that there isn't a scintilla of evidence based on those search warrants when he was indicted based on those search warrants and what they found. The problem is that the DA did not release any of that information to the school committee. So they couldn't use a lot of that information from what they yielded from the search warrants. However, they did have information about LexisNexis. They did have information about school board members having campaign material printed with taxpayers' money by that printing press. But because Willie Lantigua was one of them, they couldn't present any of that evidence because this was a whitewash. This was, let's sweep everything under the rug, let's go by the smallest infractions we can possibly go after that aren't going to put a stink on us. And I think if they really wanted to do their jobs and do it right, if they really believed Wilfredo LaBoy should have been fired, Willie Lantigua and Greg Morris should have recused themselves, even though I understand Greg Morris has a letter from the Ethics Commission saying he didn't have to. I still think morally he should have recused himself. They should have recused themselves. Let Sammy Reyes run this meeting. Let him, as the vice chairman, run this meeting and let them talk about everything. Bring everything out. I don't care if you want to talk about the Valley Patriot. Bring everything out in the open. That's what Mr. Mali has wanted. That's what Sammy Reyes has wanted. That's what the public has wanted. Bring everything
out.
Is that
what the mayor wants?
The current mayor? Oh, absolutely not.
The current mayor.
No, because he's part of it. He had his hand in the soup like everybody else, knowingly or not.
Well, shouldn't maybe that be one of the headlines?
Absolutely, it should have been conflict of interest, as we have on the front page of the Valley Patriot.
Conflicts.
The front page story in the Valley Patriot was written the day before this hearing. And so everything that you read in this story is going, it's future tense because we wrote it before the meeting, that Willie Lantigua and the school committee are about to fire and are going to fire Wilfredo LaBoy. Now, how did I know that? The hearing hadn't happened yet. Because as I said last week, this was a fait accompli. It didn't matter if Wilfredo LaBoy showed up with videotaped evidence showing that he was innocent. They were going to fire this guy no matter what because it was a CYA. These guys don't want their skeletons coming out. So let's kick LaBoy to the curb. Let's use the smallest infractions that we can to do it so nothing comes out. And I say if they were serious about going after Wilfredo, if they were serious about firing this guy, they should have had the mayor and Morris should have stepped aside. Sammy should have run the meeting, and they should have charged him with everything that they have. Every piece of evidence that they have, they should have thrown everything at him but the kitchen sink if you care about the taxpayers. You know why? You don't do that. He sues for wrongful termination, and even if he's convicted later on, he wins. And we're paying this guy $400,000 or more. Shameful.
And you know, if I can interject for a second.
Yes, Paul Adams is here in the studio with us.
You know, this is also about gross mismanagement of the $187 million school budget. I mean, this has been going on for almost a decade now that this guy's been in control of the school budget. Is that correct?
Right.
And, I mean, you've never seen a greater fraud, it seems, but at the same time, I mean, this budget it's coming directly from the state with almost no oversight. As I said before, there's fiscal mismanagement. I mean, there's no control board, you know, looking at the line items in the school committee anymore. We had one during the 1990s, and it was disbanded after, you know, the control board of the 1990s was, achieved its goals, and it did away with that. But, you know, we're seeing all this exploding in the last couple of years because there's no control board looking at the school committee line item budgets. You know, and that to me is total disregard from Beacon Hill, from previous Senate and House leaders. And, you know, these individuals are not really watching out for the taxpayers. They're watching out for their friends. You know, it's gross negligence in the worst form. And this is what happens when you have one-party control. Yeah, you know, people lose their voice.
Right, and they're looking out for themselves. Because as somebody said to me at that meeting, and he actually accused me of being part of it, and that's fine, I'll take responsibility for whatever anybody thinks that I did wrong. He said everybody's hand was in the soup. Whether it was Willie, whether it was Greg Morris, whether it was Peter LaRocque, whether it was Barry Feingold, everybody's hand was in the soup. Everybody's hands was in the soup. And nobody has clean hands. This is what he said to me. And I think to a large degree he's right. In Lawrence, you have this environment that has always existed that, you know, if I don't fill out my campaign finance reports, no one's going to care. No one's going to prosecute. Because for years, no one has. If I lie on my campaign finances, if I omit things on my campaign finances, well, nothing's going to happen because nothing ever has.
Well, maybe that's the attitude that LaBoy had regarding alcohol on premises.
Timmy, let's go to clip number 5. Paul brings up a good point, and that was the argument of the city attorney who gave this little speech toward the end. This was his closing arguments.
It's a subtle form of corruption. It seeps in. You end up with people who may gladly agree to do the bidding of the superintendent because they like him, because they respect him. At one point or another, everybody in this room has respected the superintendent. But after a while, it's not just out of liking or respecting that you do his chores. You do it because you feel you have to. You do it because he walks around and he asks questions like, "You like your job? Let me ask you this." I'll just leave you with this question. If the superintendent were interviewing for his job all over again with you, and if he was completely upfront about absolutely everything that you've heard, that is, take Dr. LaBoy's own version of what you've heard, that he was brilliant and dedicated, he's going to be a brilliant and dedicated public servant. But if he also said, "Now, members, the price of that brilliance and dedication is I'm going to treat this institution like it's my own private preserve. And I'm going to have the employees here do my private bidding anytime I want at taxpayer expense. And I'm not going to ask anybody's permission or tell anybody, and you'll get no apologies from me. Would you hire him?" I submit the answer is no. I submit that what you have heard shows that there is good cause to terminate Dr. LaBoy. Thank you.
You know, I think there's something to be said for the entitlement mentality. I know Wilfredo LaBoy. I've been on the good side of Wilfredo LaBoy. I've been on the bad side of Wilfredo LaBoy. I think he's got some great qualities. I think he is a genius. I think he is brilliant when it comes to educational stuff. I don't agree with him a lot on his ideas about curriculum. I despise the fact that he brought Turk math into the system and everyday math into the system, which I think was just, I mean, horrible and abysmal, if you know anything about those math programs. But was he brilliant? Yeah, he was. But did he have a sense of entitlement? I would argue that he probably did. In fact, no probably about it. I would argue that he did. That he did have a sense of entitlement. That because he worked so hard, which he was mocked for by the attorney, because he did 90 to 100 hours a week, because he expected no less and no more from the people under him than what he did have a sense of entitlement. It used to bug the crap out of me. It used to bug the crap out of me that Wilfredo LaBoy would go on a conference, and I'd be looking at the receipts afterwards, and I would see a 50-cent toll receipt. And you look at this guy's making like $130,000 a year, and he's submitting for 50 cents to be reimbursed on a toll receipt, and it just smacks of arrogance. It just smacks of arrogance. I don't know what's wrong with that. But
well, how many, Tom, how many years has he been superintendent?
He came in, I'm going to say about 10 years. He came in under Patty Dowling. He was hired under Patty Dowling. Yeah. And that was, I'm going to say, like around 2001, maybe.
Then would you say that he grew to be comfortable in his job? Maybe a bit too comfortable?
Yeah, look, I think anybody who's in that position who has that kind of power obviously does. Now, am I going to say that Wilfredo LaBoy was the greatest guy since sliced bread? No. Am I going to say that he's a saint? Absolutely not. Am I going to say that he's not guilty of the criminal charges against him? I don't know that. Am I going to say that he's guilty? I don't know that either.
But he had plenty of enablers.
He certainly did have plenty of enablers. I think he had one of his problems was he had a very difficult time with hiring people. I think some of the people that he surrounded himself were not doing Wilfredo LaBoy any favors. And if Wilfredo LaBoy turns out to have broken the law, if it turns out that Wilfredo LaBoy was involved in criminal activity, as it looks like he may have been, then I'm going to be the first guy sitting here saying he should be convicted. I know that people don't like this guy. I know that there's a lot of people who don't like this guy. In fact, probably even hate this guy. And maybe with good reason. But now that we're in the official phase of firing and criminal hearings and all this stuff, let's look at the evidence. I got a phone call off the air during the last break. Someone said, a friend of mine called and he asked me, why don't you talk about some of the good things that Wilfredo LaBoy has done for the district? And he's right. We published month after month figures that the dropout rate in Lawrence was going down. Graduation rates were going up. The teen pregnancy was down. That tardiness, attendance in the schools was up. Tardiness was down. Those are all things that I think go to credit Wilfredo LaBoy, except now, Paul.
I don't understand why that's relevant when it comes to what we're talking about now. It's not whether he was a good or a bad superintendent. It's whether he violated the law or not and if he should be fired for that.
Yeah, I think that the caller wanted me to bring it up because he wanted me to give a full perspective of the superintendent and what was going on. Because if you listen to some people, the guy was always bad. Everything he did was bad. Everything that happened in the schools was his fault. He was the evil incarnate. He was Darth Vader.
But when you look at a situation like this, you should admit or you should even presume that he did his job wonderfully. But that has little to do with what they're looking at now.
I agree. So after this little shindig, after this little event, this is going to be clip number, well, 7 when you get to it, Tim. You don't have to run. I love when he runs like that. Makes me feel powerful. I speak, people run, right? This is going to be clip number 6. So I went over to, this is going to be clip number 5. Wait. Number 7. All right. So I went over to Attorney Mullen afterwards, and I asked him a couple of pretty tough questions. I don't think he knew who I was, so I was able to get away with this. Thank God. Because I'm pretty sure if he knew who I was, he wouldn't have even taken my question.
Yeah. Right. Okay, you wanted to get rid of... Sorry for that. No problem. Can you just state your name for me and spell it for me?
Sure. I'm Tom Mullen. That's M-U-L-L-E-N.
And where are you? What's your law office?
My law office is at 545 Salem Street in Wakefield.
And is it Mullen and Mullen, or what is the name of the office?
Law office of Thomas A. Mullen.
Okay, great. Watching the meeting tonight, it seemed like the evidence, considering what we've been expecting through the media reports, was going to be a lot more. It was going to be a lot stronger. It seemed very, very weak. There were no discussions about printing being done for political candidates. There was no discussion of involvement of Mr. Reyes, Mr. Rivera, some of the allegations about embezzling and some of these other things. Why were those things not presented?
We were tremendously handicapped by the fact that we don't have the power that the grand jury does to obtain evidence. A great deal of evidence that backs up the 9 indictments against the superintendent is exclusively in the hands of the district attorney, and they are not able to share that evidence with us.
So, with your hands tied like that, how were you able to present any kind of a case that the superintendent that the superintendent had violated any policies or broken any laws? Seems like from what we heard, as a neutral observer, from what we've heard, we didn't hear any of the evidence that we expected to hear.
Yeah, the evidence that you'd expect from the indictments you're going to have to hear at the criminal trial. We don't have access to that evidence. But what we did have was evidence that the superintendent abused his position by having employees run personal errands for himself and his family members without reimbursing the city, and that he even used the city printing press for the benefit of his son's own business.
There was evidence, though, that you don't need to get from the DA's office that printing was done for political candidates, including the mayor of the city of Lawrence and one current school committee member, as is listed by the indictment that was released to the public. Why wasn't any of that brought up?
My job was just to present the evidence in support of the allegations that were set forth in the notice to terminate that was sent by the school committee to Superintendent LaBoy. So I wasn't privy to their decision making as to what to put into that notice of intent.
Were you told to or not to present certain evidence by the committee or committee members?
Well, I was told my job was to put in all the evidence that I could on every element that was in the notice of intent.
I see.
But I legally couldn't present any evidence beyond the notice of intent.
Okay. So in the notice of intent, there was no, and I don't have it in front of me, but I have it over at my chair. There was nothing listed in there about printing for political candidates or any of that kind of stuff?
No.
Okay, great. Thanks. I appreciate your time.
All right. So I started to walk away, and I thought of another question. This is going to be the next clip, Timmy. It's going to be clip number 8. Just very quick.
One more, and I'll let you go. Are you confident at all that if Mr. LeBoy sues for wrongful termination, given the weak case that was presented tonight, that he'll prevail in any way?
See, I don't think that it was weak. I think that we had overwhelming evidence of wrongdoing. I think that Superintendent LeBoy was trying to say was that you couldn't pinpoint any large quantity of money that the city lost as a result of that wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
But none of us has the privilege of having subordinates drive our family members around during working hours, pick up our trash during working hours, and otherwise use the city as their private preserve, which is what the superintendent was doing. If there's to be an appeal from here, it's to an arbitrator, and yes, I'm quite confident that we prevail.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
He didn't answer the question because I guess I must have asked him off topic, off microphone. The charges were drafted by who? Does anybody know it was drafted by? Oh, Willie Lantigua. Oh, yes, you want to? Willie Lantigua, the chief. Right, Paul.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Can you take a break? Is that what's going on? Something
no.
going on here? Though? I don't know.
No, I'm just. We want to make sure that your microphone is working.
No, my microphone's working. It's the box that's not working. This little box over here.
Well, I noticed that he mentioned what, 2 things out of 10 years.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, is that? Does that sound convincing to you that somebody who put in a lot of hours, who did a lot of hard work for over 10 years, should be fired for?
Yeah, I think if it was not Wilfredo LeBoy, if he was not as hated as he is, if he was not the media magnet that he is, and they found out that there was a liquor cabinet in his office, he probably would have been told by somebody, get rid of the liquor cabinet.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would have been the end of it.
Yeah.
If they found out that there was a school department employee driving his son to work every day, even though it's a school department employee that does 90 hours a week,
yeah,
is not being paid overtime, and is allowed to do, you know, personal stuff during the day because they do 90 hours a week, I think he probably would have just been told, knock it off.
Reminded that this is not...
You know, it just looks bad. Even though maybe it's technically not illegal, it looks bad, you shouldn't do it, just knock it off. But because it's Wilfredo LeBoy, that didn't happen. Now, here's the proof. This week, there was a story that a kid, a special needs kid, walked away from the Potham school, was picked up by somebody in a white van who was driving on the ramp to 495. It was a woman who saw this kid wandering, got the kid in the van, and found out where the kid lived or near where the kid lived and drove the kid to a Wendy's and dropped the kid off near where his house was. If Wilfredo LeBoy was the superintendent when that happened this week, the headlines would have been, why didn't Wilfredo LeBoy do... How could Wilfredo LeBoy allow a special needs kid to walk away from the Potham school? Just like with the drinking party incident at the high school, just like the lasagna incident at the high school, just like the principal that wrote a racy romance novel. It all would have been laid at the feet of Wilfredo LeBoy, but here's what we didn't hear this week. It's all Mary Lou Bergeron's fault. We didn't hear that.
All right. Now, you're leading us to a very important question that needs to be asked at this point, which probably doesn't have an easy answer.
Okay.
And that is, why do they have something against Wilfredo LeBoy? What is it that they hate about him that they do not give him the benefit of the doubt about anything?
I think it's just something that's been building over the years. It was the thing with Amy McGovern. It was the problems that he was having with certain groups within the city. I think the Eagle Tribune at one point, but remember, we started this Valley Patriot newspaper 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Because we had a story about Wilfredo LeBoy bringing school board members to 1 Mill Street and charging the taxpayers, and it was only the school board members that were voting on his budgets.
Yeah.
We did that, and we started this paper because when we got that information, I gave it to a friend of mine, Orion Johnson, at the Tribune, and said, here's a story for you guys. You're not going to believe what's going on. And he called me back a week later and said, the editors aren't interested. They like Wilfredo LeBoy. Wilfredo LeBoy can do no wrong. So we started the Valley Patriot because of that story. If you go back to the very first edition, it's on the front page of the first edition.
By the way, I assume you were paraphrasing the Eagle Tribune by saying that Wilfredo Laborie can do no wrong?
This is what I was told by my good friend, OJ, who said that as far as they're concerned, this guy can do no wrong. They're not going to write a story about it. Well, somewhere along the way, they decided that they could make more money by going after Wilfredo Laborie than by protecting him. And so they just started going after Wilfredo Laborie for anything that happened in the Lawrence schools was Wilfredo Laborie's fault. True or untrue? A teacher brings in lasagna to class. She's told not to bring food into her classroom. The kids have a party. They throw the lasagna, and it's sticking against the wall. There's all kinds of sauce against the wall. And somehow that's Wilfredo Laborie's fault. I don't get that.
But anyway, Tom, it's a cumulative effect.
I agree that
people's sentiments against the superintendent have gone sour, and so they're not willing to give him the benefit of the doubt about anything
anymore.
And
again, I'm not saying he's a saint, and I'm not saying that he's not guilty of criminal wrongdoing. I'm not defending him. What I'm just trying to do is put it into perspective for people, because it's very easy to hear the news every day about elected official so-and-so doing something stupid. And if you're a liberal, you hate Sarah Palin, so everything she does that's in the paper, you go, oh, I can't believe she did that again. That's so stupid. And if you're conservative, everything Barack Obama or Joe Biden does is just stupid and ridiculous, and the piling goes on. And I just want to bring it back to the middle a little bit and say he's a human being. He was a good superintendent, maybe even a great superintendent at doing his job. And if he did criminal wrongdoing, he should go to jail and he should serve the max.
And you know, I hate to be too cynical here, but, you know, we're going to keep circling the wagon with this stuff. I mean, this will continue to happen unless there's stronger transparency and oversight. I mean, we haven't had that for more than a decade in Lawrence. You know, that's gross negligence. That's got to end.
Tim says we need to take a break. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. I'm going to let Paul Adams talk a little bit more about this. Maybe we'll chat with Michelle a little bit. Thank God she's still here. We haven't scared her away yet. And then hopefully we're going to have a little time to talk about this bullying case, maybe some Tea Party stuff. I had one other thing, but I don't have it in my notes, so I guess we'll just save that for next week.
Who's got that kind of time anyway?
I know, really. It's only a 3-hour show. Like, can you believe it's almost over, Michelle? Like, seriously?
I can't, went by quick.
Did go by
very
quick.
It's a shame we didn't have Michelle on for at least 10 minutes just talking about herself.
Oh, we will. We'll do that, before the end of the show. Yeah, that'll be fine.
Hey,
and,
what about
and
me?
Poor Paul has been here. He hasn't gotten half the time that Sal Tabeat had on the microphone, so we'll give him some time on that, too. Here on the Paying Attention Radio program, everybody gets it. Everybody gets it. Even fired Lawrence School Superintendent Wilfredo Laborie.
Win or lose, never mind, as long as you're my shoulder. Every night I used to cry against the wall, but now I've got a shoulder that I can.
This is Mitt Romney, and you're listening to the Paying Attention Radio program with Tom Duggan.
Is anybody on the line, Jess?
Yes, we do. We have Tennis Lily.
Oh, Tennis is on the line.
Yeah.
Tennis, you're on the air.
What does Mr. Grundy think the single biggest issue that will face him as a district attorney?
Rooting out communism.
we got him!
He made me say
no,
that.
What? So. He just got my vote.
I was
voting for Blodgett right up until that very second. Now I'm voting for Rick Grundy.
I don't believe you for a minute.
She's been
right, I'm watching Desk Control and I'm calling him a sicko. 978-454-4980. Oh, if we only had another hour. So we've talked a little bit about the Wilfredo Laborie stuff, and what I'm going to do is after this program, we're going to sit down with maybe right after or maybe sometime later on during the week, sit down with Michelle, and we're going to have Michelle write a story about the news that we talked about on this program. Because as of yet, as of today, as of right now this minute, you have heard nothing out of any of the media breaking the story that the acting superintendent was in possession and distributing alcohol on school property and admitting this at the time that they fired the superintendent of school. So now I ask you, if Wilfredo Laborie should be fired for having alcohol in his office, should not the acting superintendent also be fired for doing so? For admitting under oath that she brought alcohol in and distributed it on school property. Now, to be honest with you, I think it's the silliest thing in the world. But if this is the standard we're going to hold people to, then fine.
Well, that was Laborie's lawyer's claim, wasn't it? I mean, that's what
I think his claim was. Well, everybody's doing it. Why are you just firing this guy? And I think,
well, including the acting superintendent,
right, right, who apparently was giving out Secret Santa gifts of wine as late as December, which was after
on school property, which was after
Wilfredo LaBoy was charged with illegally having alcohol on school property, which is, you know, to me, I don't know, and I'm not against Mary Lou Bergeron. I'm not on any kind of campaign. I don't hate her. I don't have a personal beef against her. But if this is the standard, then they ought to immediately stop proceedings to remove Mary Lou Bergeron. Paul Adams?
Absolutely. Look, I'm totally in line with you on that one. I mean, again, look, you know, this is a huge problem with accountability. We need a restoration of accountability, right? And so I see a lot of that coming from the state. You know, look at the people who have been making the decisions the last couple of years, and it's been Deval Patrick and the Democrats, one party control. You know, there's really no accountability behind that. So, you know, where would I start? I mean, if you don't mind,
please go ahead.
Go on a little rant here.
Sure. We've been neglecting you the whole show, so I'll give you some time.
No, look, I think that we should start with some basic government reforms. This will restore accountability by volumes. I mean, reform the state pension system. You know, end pensions for politicians, special perks. For elected officials, you know, cut off salaries for jailed politicians. I mean, we've had three indicted speakers of the House in 10 years.
And they're still collecting.
And they're still collecting, yeah. Exactly. And you know, part of the problem with that is, I mean, the money is probably more minute, but it sends the wrong message. And meanwhile, you know, the state is in a total fiscal strait. So, you know, and then other things we can do are privatize everything that we possibly can. I mean, if you have the mayor of Chicago saying privatize everything, then probably, you know, we could take a few, you know, pointers out of that, you know, here in Massachusetts as well. And, you know, we should reprioritize crucial services, you know, education money and local services. I mean, there's no accountability because there's no one making critical decisions that will send money exactly where it needs to go. You know, we have people that are trying to micromanage things yet manage nothing at all. I mean, there's no one's making the tough calls. And then, you know, subject state programs to yearly performance reviews to justify their existence. You know, these are basic things that we can do right now to restore accountability and trustworthiness in government, to be honest.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. Well, Tom, is there anybody that might be afraid right now of Wilfredo LaBoy being fired as to what he might say in the near future?
Well, I would venture that most of the politicians in Lawrence, and one thing that I did expect that we didn't see, I would venture most politicians in Lawrence are frightened out of their mind about what Wilfredo LaBoy might say when he gets on the stand in a criminal trial. Because we saw a little bit of a preview when Scott Gleason, we didn't play the clip, but when Scott Gleason, as his attorney, pointed to the school committee and said, and even some of you sitting up there were involved with this printing press thing. And I think that's a preview of things to come.
And people not in the audience. You know, the state reps. The state reps were involved in it. The congressional candidates.
Yeah, well,
all the major players who really haven't said anything.
Sure, we've got Willie Lantigua, the Chiefs campaign. He says he knew nothing about it. Let's just take him at his word. It doesn't matter if he knew anything about it. If his campaign benefited from printing that was done at the Lawrence Public Schools, he should have recused himself. Morally. If not legally, he should have stepped aside morally and said, I don't want to become the focus of this. Charge him with everything you've got, and I'm going to step aside so that I won't be an impediment to this whole process being done. But instead, what we saw was Will Lantigua and the school committee drawing up these ridiculous charges, these silly charges, even though we know that there's so much more there that they could have brought up.
And think he won't recuse himself because?
Well, because then it's almost like an admission of guilt.
Which he doesn't need right now.
No, he doesn't want that. He certainly doesn't want that. So, Paul, if you become a state rep, and there's a possibility of putting Lawrence into receivership, say you win and Charlie Baker wins. I don't know if he's going to because he's too much of a nice guy. That's something we can talk about later, I guess. But say you win and Charlie Baker wins. Or let's say you win and Tim Cahill wins. And there's a move to put Lawrence into receivership, to put in a fiscal control board. What do you do? What's your take on
that? Well, I don't think they would put Lawrence into receivership. I mean, that's a pretty extreme move right there. I mean, it's almost the same as bankruptcy, except you give people from the Department of Revenue and individuals from the state administration and finance the opportunity to micromanage the decision-making process in Lawrence. And it takes the city councilors, the school committee members, the mayor, essentially out of it. I mean, what you need is a strong finance control board. And I say you keep it permanently there. I mean, Lawrence has been dealing with these issues for decades, and there's no reason that we should let up right now. I mean,
why should a city like Lawrence be allowed to kick in $40 million of a $280 million budget and have the rest of the state taxpayers pick up the freight for the other $240 million? Why not start saying to Lawrence from the state level, you need to start getting rid of low-income housing and start bringing in middle-income housing so that your tax base can sustain what you spend?
Yeah, well, look, we've got to help Lawrence get itself back on its own feet. And that a lot of that has to do with the state tax policy. The overall climate is horrible. I mean, I've spoken with dozens of business leaders who have left Massachusetts because it's too unpredictable. You know, they have, and even more so than the tax policy, they have regulators coming in and harassing them every week. And so, yeah, I mean, this sends a wrong message. I mean, and guarantee you that North Carolina and Florida and other states are putting all of this on their literature and recruiting in recruiting businesses and individuals to move to their states. You know, so it's a fundamental change we need at the state level. And, you know, I'll support that. I'll aggressively pursue that. You know, I'll make this a full-time effort to put Lawrence, put Lawrence in the forefront.
All right, 978-454-4980. A very interesting story that's been brewing. It's been talked about, the bullying case in South Hadley. I know Paul wants in on this a little bit, and I wish we had more time. I agree that these kids who bullied this girl, she ended up committing suicide. I agree that they should be criminally charged. I also agree that administrators who knew the level of the bullying, I know some people say any teacher that knew about this should be fired, any administrator that knew about this should be fired. I take a little bit more of a middle-of-the-road stand. If you are a teacher or you are an administrator that knew about the level of bullying, because bullying goes on at every school every day, and 99 times out of 100 it doesn't result in something going on, just kids being kids. Teachers and administrators that knew the level of bullying, that knew the severity of what was going on, that knew the severity of how distraught this girl was and how badly she was picked on, certainly should be criminally charged. But I have to say, I stopped short at creating another law.
Yeah.
We have all of these laws in the books about harassment, sexual harassment, all these, assault, battery, all the things that were done to her, including statutory rape. They can be charged and are being charged under those. I don't think we need another law. Paul?
Yeah, why can't the school committees and the Department of Education come up with a more adequate response? I mean, why do we need, and I agree with you, why do we need another overarching state law that's one size fits all for the state but doesn't make any sense for the local district? I mean, why can't we punish kids and administrators who are directly involved in this? And, you know, I think that's the right message. Get the government out of the out of the problem.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's a government school that we're talking about, so I don't think you can get the government out of the problem. I think they need to be more involved in this kind of problem. But secondly, I haven't heard either one of you talk about the parents. I mean, aren't they responsible partly for what went on?
Yeah, I don't know. And normally, I'm with you on you blame the parents first, but I know that my 15-year-old is at the high school in North Andover.
Yeah.
I know almost nothing about what goes on between her and her friends, because when she comes home,
and whose
even
fault
my 12-year-old comes home, how was school today? Good. What'd you do? Learned.
Well,
I mean, those are the answers that you get when your kids come home. So if you don't know, if your kids aren't sharing with you what's going on in the schools, it's hard to hold the parents responsible for what the kids are doing in the schools.
Well, are the parents responsible for the way that they brought their child up in order to do what that child just did?
Well, I mean, kids aren't really talking about what's going on at school either. So, you know, when I was bullied, I didn't really go home and talk about it because I was embarrassed, right? I just wanted to shrug it off, you know, kick the can down the street a little more. But, you know, why can't we redirect government's role in all of this? You know, why can't we have, days where we combat bullying in school by getting administrators to, give a talk before assembly or something? You know, why do all of a sudden we have to create a new law? You know, get school administrators, get parents, get kids more involved, make more awareness about the problems out there.
Well, these kids are evil. You think an administrator coming up and say in an auditorium making a speech about how bullying is not nice?
The government's not evil.
But are kids going to listen to that? The ones that want to do the bullying? I don't think so.
Hey, I'll tell you this. I remember when we had assemblies in school about a particular issue, you know, whatever have you. And it left a lasting impression on me because time and again. I remember when bullying was brought up on a couple of occasions. Not as frequently as much of a problem then as it is now, but I remember the lasting impression it had because it was easier for me to shrug off. And I think kids who were doing the bullying thought, wow, you know, I'm a real jerk. Maybe I should stop. And, you know, you keep up the pressure on the kids. Keep the pressure on the school administrators. Well, the state doesn't need to get involved.
If these kids have that kind of moral conscience to actually look at themselves and say, ooh, I'm a bad person. I shouldn't be doing this. I mean, that's a great story you've got there. But I don't know if that's all that common.
Since Michelle is probably the closest to have graduated high school from all of us, Michelle, what do you think about all this? What do you think about this bullying thing? I mean, you just graduated from high school, I assume, like 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Did you see this kind of stuff, and what role do you think the administrators should have?
To tell you the truth, I really, when I was in high school, I didn't see bullying like this at all. It's like, this just surprises me completely. Like, I know, like, kids were definitely picked on in school, but never to the extent that they are now.
She was super popular.
No.
Yeah, go figure.
It has nothing to do with that, really.
But like, I say, Michelle, that being picked on is a form of bullying. Maybe a slight form, but a form.
Yeah, I have definitely a question.
But picking on, like, if someone were to pick on, I don't know how to explain it. Like, what kids are doing to kids now, I don't think is picking on.
Right.
It's severe.
And there's, you're right, there's different levels of bullying, too. Now, I was bullied unmercifully in high school. Go figure, right? But I was also a loudmouth. I was also somebody who was an agitator. So there were times when...
No!
There were times when kids would get in trouble for bullying me. And then there were other times when I would get in trouble, even though I was being bullied, because I sometimes deserved it. Honestly, there were times when I knew there was a kid that just had no access to me at all, except for like 10 minutes during the day when we were swapping classes. And I'd wait until he was 4 or 5 feet away, and then I'd say something to him, and he'd chase me down the corridor. But then I'd run to my next class, and I knew I wouldn't see him again until 12:14 the next day. And so, you know, there are kids who sometimes are picked on because they deserve it. Sometimes I deserve it. There were a lot of times that I didn't. But I was picked on unmercifully to the point where I ended up leaving the vocational school, the Greater Lawrence Voc, and transferring to Lawrence High because I thought I was safer at Lawrence High School. And believe it or not, I was.
Well, you took action.
Yeah.
And you probably had a few people around you in your circles that encouraged you to take that action. It's probably not a decision to make totally alone
on
your own.
Most of my teachers were going,
teenager.
Yeah, you're right, transfer out of here.
Right.
Get this kid to Lawrence High School.
Right. So, I mean, you had the necessary level of involvement to force a change in your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what should happen. You know, you increase awareness of what's going on out there. Encourage kids to go to their administrators or their parents and get issues resolved instead of getting the state involved. I mean, you see these overarching policies coming down from the state, which are, you know, it just turns into another forced mandate. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wrong.
Can you come back, Paul, and talk about, maybe even call in again, because I really feel bad. I gave Sal a lot more time because we didn't have Breaking LeBoy stuff when he was here. To talk a little bit about where you stand on things like casino gambling and yep. You know, candy taxes and seatbelts and all that kind of stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Love to come in.
A quick question for you, Paul. You continue to mention that you're against, I gotcha, Timmy, you're against state involvement in people's lives, particularly now in children's lives and in families' lives, within the public school system. My question, and just you can give me just a quick answer, is what do you think about the public school system? Are you for that? Are you for the expansion of that, the giving of more money to that, or do you promote private schools and homeschooling?
Well, who isn't for the public schools? I mean, if
me.
Anything...
Me.
Well, look, we all support a decent public education, but...
No, problem, we don't.
Well, the problem with public education is that we haven't been level funding it the last couple of years. So the bottom is falling out. And look, the vast majority of citizens in Massachusetts send their kids to public schools. And we need to level fund that, but also provide additional options. Now, why not provide vouchers for kids in Lawrence? We're not talking about that. You know, we have test scores falling out of the bottom of the floor, but you know, we're not talking about additional school choice options for these kids. So I'll start there.
So he's for the continuation of governments being involved in children's lives
schools.
In public schools.
No, I support
public schools.
Public schools to
right.
the extent that parents want their children to be in those schools, okay? But we should provide them at the same time with options in order to...
support school choice and all that stuff.
Yeah, of course. Support vouchers. You know, I would aggressively pursue that.
Right,
that's something that hasn't been approached.
We got a minute left. Michelle.
Yes.
Did you have fun?
I did. I can't wait to come back.
Well, we're going to actually podcast the show online. We do that every month, every week. So you'll be able to hear yourself on the air. And before we go, just tell us a little bit about you, because I'm not hearing any music because I don't have my...
Yes.
30 seconds.
Well, I am a junior at UMass Lowell, and I'm studying communications. And this is my first day interning.
You're going to come back?
Yes.
We didn't scare her away.
She's beaming. If you could just see her face right now.
She's having fun.
Absolutely.
She's having a blast. We're going to have her back in next week. I'm not sure if we're going to be here. Is the Republican convention. And I will post whether we are or not online. Thanks for listening on Paying Attention. Everybody gets it. Everybody gets it.
See you there.
Even Michelle. Telling